Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, sounds good to me. First of all, I am so excited. I just spoke to Jen off the air. Jen Clark is with us from Australia, and so this is going to be great. This is the first international citizen legislative workshop. We're just going to kind of chat and have fun at first because we have an amazing amount of work to do. But let's get going here. So let me get my applause. Where's I have so many things I have to sort through. Here we go. There we go. This is it. So here we are connected with, I think, is it Melbourne or are you in Canberra? Where are you right now, Jen?
Right this moment, I'm in Melbourne and in a few hours heading to Canberra. So g'day, mate. G'day from Australia to everyone.
G'day. How's it going? My best fake Australian accent. Here's the funny thing. I don't know if I told you this. I used to live in Australia. I spent 4 years in Melbourne. I went to Caulfield Grammar was my school. I used to take a couple of streetcars, the trams. You know, and with all the school kids, we're all there in our school uniforms with different crests and everything else like that. I love Australia. I want to go back. There's so much that I want to see in the country. I saw a fair bit when I was there, but I left when I was, you know, like a young teenager and came to the United States. And so I grew up in three different countries, Canada, Australia, and the United States. I've got a family in Adelaide, which I really don't know because I was such a kid when I was there. But as soon as the name Penglis gets out, that hey, this Jen Clark's talking to Greg Penglis in Australia, half of Adelaide is going to go, "What? Is that our cousin? What's going on over there?" So it's going to be really exciting. But you can stay as long as you want. We got a 3-hour show. You're welcome to join us for all of it because it's going to be really interesting. Or if you have to go do like real life stuff, you know, that's fair enough too. But let's get right into it. Jen sent me, mm-hmm. 5 paragraphs of stuff, like about 30 seconds before airtime. She says, here, read this. I'm like, what?
I know. No, you don't read it. We just talk.
Well, I'm not a speed reader. I'm a speed talker, not a speed reader. Yeah. So tell me what's going on. Tell me what's happening in Melbourne. Tell me what's going on. Just give us the whole, I'm just going to let you go. Just tell us the story of COVID in Australia, and let's start there.
Okay, that's a great starting point. So right at this moment, we are witnessing in Australia the first of its kind and the largest of anything similar to it in the way of what we would call a people's revolution. And so our capital city, which is Canberra, so it's not Melbourne or Sydney, which a lot of people built capital because Melbourne and Sydney couldn't decide who was the better city to build capital.
Yeah, that's how we got DC. Nobody wants the capital in their state.
Yeah, right?
So let's give them their
exactly.
own district.
Exactly.
Yeah, ACT, Australia's so capital territory, right? Isn't that it has a special designation?
Exactly.
Oh, I remember. I remember my school history.
It does have
okay.
its own designation. Yeah,
right.
So it's
okay.
literally in the middle of nowhere in New South Wales. And so you only go there for two reasons. One, mm-hmm. because you are a politician, or two, you work for the politicians or public service. But other than that, or three, you work for those people in different organizations who service them. So it's really a public service town. And it's in the middle of the country, so it's in high country. It's freezing cold in winter, and it's just a very sterile environment. But right now, people from all over Australia are converging on Canberra. We have something going called Convoy to Canberra.
Okay.
And it was inspired by the Canadian trucker movement to Ottawa. But we don't have the same sort of financial setup like a lot of Canadian truckers do, where they own their own trucks. A lot of our truckers subcontract to the corporation truck companies. So if they were to drive those trucks to Canberra, the first thing that would happen is they'd be pulled over and arrested for theft, right? So.
Oh, that's right, because I was thinking being fired, but no, but it's theft because that's corporate property, right?
That's right.
That would make sense. Oh, okay.
Exactly.
Ooh.
Yeah. So our truckers feel exactly the same way as yours and Canada's. In fact, we started a trucker convoy here that inspired the Canadian one, funnily enough.
Oh, wow.
And so, yeah, so we were re-inspired, but we couldn't, you know, the numbers aren't in the trucks. but the numbers are in the people. So the people here are extremely discontented and are very much awakening every day as this, you know, this tyrannical environment that we find ourselves in this laid-back, easy-going beaches and barbecue type country has suddenly turned into a dystopia. And they've just announced today that you will not be deemed up to date with your injections for the COVID-19 vaccine if you go more than 6 months. So now you must have 3 to qualify to enter a restaurant or whatever, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And when the next booster comes along, if you don't have that within a 6 month window, then you are considered unvaxxed. So it's an incredible division of society that has actually ignited an incredible spirit, and the Australian spirit's a very good one, and historically in war, we're known for it. In fact, including the US, a lot of the generals of different armies around the world always say if they ever go into battle, there's 2 countries that they want on their side. They want the Kiwis to go in and take the place, and then they want the Aussies to hold it.
Interesting.
So, that gives you an idea of the spirit and united in a way that we just haven't seen before, because we've never had to fight for our own land on our own land. We haven't been challenged in the same ways.
Hmm.
But what's happening right now is people from all over the country are converging on Canberra. And I'm talking people are driving 2 and 3 days distance. So Australia is the same size as the USA. In fact, you could overlay Australia on the USA to give you an idea. But
New York to San Francisco is like Sydney to Perth. It's the same distance.
Perth to Sydney. Right.
Yeah.
Now, to give you an idea, ACT or Canberra sits 2 and a bit hours just south of Sydney. So it's literally, if you're coming from Western Australia. So we've got people coming from the very top end of Western Australia that are driving 3 days. So there are people that have nothing else to lose now. And they've shut out of jobs, they've lost businesses, they've lost homes, they don't want to put their children into a system that is potentially going to take their parental rights away. So there's all sorts of dynamics going on here and lots of legal stuff being pushed through that, when I say push through, probably the more appropriate word is ram through.
Oh, no, yeah, that's, yeah. Yeah, I was reading your constitution and the digital, was the digital ID law. We'll talk about that later, but it's unbelievable what's going on there. We're all watching this going in horrors, Anyway, keep going.
It is incredible. Yeah. So this uprising now will culminate this Saturday. So it's Thursday night, 11 p.m. here as I'm talking to you. And so on Saturday at 11 a.m., we begin a march to Parliament House, which is our, it's our office of government, basically, is Parliament House in Canberra. Mm-hmm. And so people are literally driving from everywhere. There's fundraising type activities. So GoFundMe also froze a couple of million on us.
For now, until they cancel it. You know, they cancel the Canadian truckers. Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's right. Well, we've already pivoted, but we're funding people's petrol, their fuel or gas bills, accommodation, meals. So we have massive campsites set up in Canberra with camp kitchens. And what it's done is it's brought people back alive again. So they went through this, spiritual dampening is darkening is probably more appropriate word for it, being isolated and denigrated. Really, and all of a sudden they've become alive again and connected and purpose-driven, and a lot of them, like I said, with nothing to lose. So we're not leaving Canberra until this job is done. So as a collective, that is. So I've already been up in Canberra, of course, but we had to come home. We're actually moving house for my mother-in-law. So we've got to be there.
You're all in on this deal.
So
you're already committed.
Yeah. So we've had that's right. We've had to drive back to Melbourne for a few days, get that sorted. But then in about 8 hours from now, I'm actually back in a convoy and we're taking off back up to Canberra and ready for this weekend. So the people have awakened to so many improprieties in this country. We've discovered a lot of that our mm-hmm. governments have been operating under, and then bringing it up to present day under the COVID-19 regime, we've found ourselves under new laws, which are breathtaking, to say the least, but also very mm-hmm. frightening, particularly in Victoria, the state I'm in, which is Melbourne's the capital of. The ruler here is, his nickname is Dictator Dan. That'll probably give you a good idea.
That tells me all I need to know about him. Okay.
But he fashions himself on literally being the one, the first, the biggest, the best, the independent thinker. And
Mussolini. He's Mussolini. That's what he sounds like.
He's very frightening. Some of the things that he's done, he did a deal with China that made Victoria the gateway to Australia for China. Hmm. And it was the deal was so scary that it was secretive, and he refused to release the information. So the federal government, federal government had to pass some legislation that forced him to disclose the nature of the agreement he'd made with China, and was called to a deadline to do that. And on that deadline, handed over the information, and the federal government actually cancelled the Road Initiative agreement because it was not in Australia's interest to allow that deal to go forward. So he runs Victoria like he's running his own independent country, and mm-hmm. he absolutely has a vision of being a global leader of some sort. But it's very dangerous, the power by decree that this man holds through legislation he's ran through, under this COVID-19 regime. So that's a lot to take in.
No, it's not. I got my page of notes. I'm good. No, I write fast. I think fast. I write fast. I talk fast. I just don't read fast.
That's true.
So this is, three out of four ain't bad. I'm sorry, go ahead.
So in a nutshell, there's a beautiful spiritual awakening happening of the Australian people, but under a very frightening, dystopian federal and state government regime that is not painting a very fruitful or very autonomous future for humanity. In fact, quite the opposite. So we want to reverse that. We've got a lot of work we have to do. And mm-hmm. we didn't know this, but in the state that I'm in, we made a deal with the United Nations at the beginning of the official declaration of the pandemic that Melbourne would be the centre of experiment for the United Nations on how a society reacts to government mandates with COVID-19. And this is actually publicly stated. Anyone wants to look it up, you Google the Melbourne Experiment, United Nations, or the Melbourne Experiment, Monash University, which is the body that it's been ran out of. So what they do is bring in all of these restrictions and things that you see going on here, and they play with it here. See what works, what doesn't work, how people respond, what the general public reaction is, and then we watch it get rolled out into other places all around the world. And every time they tighten the screws a little bit more, and then it circles back to us and it's tightened a little bit more. So we ended up with the longest and harshest lockdowns in the world as a result of that and this tyrannical leader. So, we really dance with the devil here. And it was a very easy market to capture because Australians are so laid back, and we've never been challenged in these ways. So if ever you were going to pick your mark, it's a bit like, who do you ask for the money, mum or dad? Which one's the easy touch, right? We were a very easy touch, and we didn't see it coming. And so we're backpedaling at a rapid rate. And so we're a lot further down the tube than a lot of other places are in the world as well. And it's a very slippery slope we're on, and we're not the only ones. But what this situation we find ourselves in has done is mm-hmm. invoke a determination that is preserved for an act of, war. And when I was talking about, warfare before, historically, where generals of armies would want Australians, and somehow or another that's spirit has, you know, genetically been passed on. And
well, in America, we'd say they pissed off the wrong people. You know, you picked on the wrong people,
right?
This time. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you knocked on the wrong door, buddy, and people aren't going to take it anymore. So there is an uprising here, and mm-hmm. it is being blacked out by the mainstream media. In fact, the only report they do is, you know, they talk down. So, for example, there was about, someone estimated about 20,000 people, and the media reported a few hundred. That gives you an idea of that. And they're all always vilified as extreme right-wing neo-Nazi racists. So that's the minority, this, you know, fringe minority kind of idea, but it's actually not. It's everyday mums and dads.
Well, see, and people know this, though.
It's hilarious.
You know, this is where...
You see, Indian.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Go on.
I was going to say, you're in the best of times, you're in the worst of times.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's with you've got the best of technology for outreach and for actually, you know, getting together protests, and the government has the best of technology to be invasive and steal your privacy. So it's a double-edged sword, but we can, you know, we just have to learn how to, you know, use our swords better than their swords. And I mean that metaphorically, I'm talking about, because everything we do here at Action Radio is very peaceful. We're just revolutionary at the same time. But this is fascinating. So,
right, we're very peaceful. Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, and you can be peaceful. There's nothing violent about this. The only violence is going to come from government, because when they start to lose power, that's when they get violent. And that's when they call you extremists, and that's when they do arrests and mass sweeps and all kinds of other things. Let me ask you sort of a general question first.
Well,
we've got
like
the problem.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Yeah. Oh, well, I was just going to say, it's like a child when they can't get their way, the only mm-hmm. thing they have left is to throw a tantrum.
Mm-hmm.
So they throw a tantrum, you know, and that's what we're seeing with our government. And like they literally, we call it a tanty, throwing a tanty, because there's nothing else, there's nothing they can do to us anymore. Yeah. You know, Australians, we cut everything off, make it shorter and easier.
Oh, it's hysterical. Oh, yeah. You're going to help me get my Australian language back. Yeah, there is an Australian language, folks. It's a derivation of English, okay? So I need to learn words like petrol and some of the other things I need to learn again, you know, and this is going to be fine. And, of course, I'm in America, we're in the British system of measurement, which, of course, the Commonwealth now uses the metric system. So we might have to do a little conversions here.
Yeah.
Yeah, but we'll get over that. Okay, so there was so many to tell you. I got 5 hours of questions in my already, at least. This is going to be fun. First of all, I'm really enjoying talking to you, and we are. I think we can accomplish some amazing things, you know, between our countries here, and also bring in the Canadians. And I'm also talking to folks in New Zealand and Israel. And one day I'm going to have you all on the phone at the same time. We're going to have a worldwide citizen legislative conference. It's going to be absolutely amazing. Yeah, we're all making history here right now, which is kind of cool. There's a couple of things I got introduced to by Dr. Robert Malone, Dr. Peter McCullough on Joe Rogan's podcast, and I'd gotten it before. There's a wonderful website called the Academy of Ideas, and they talked about mass psychosis, and this is what's going on worldwide.
Oh, yeah.
There's a mass psychosis, and what it means is, you know, I'll drag out the 4 points and the cures and things like that. I didn't know I was going to talk about this today, but the cures, the way you get around a mass psychosis, you know, of where you have a blinded hypnotic population focused on one thing, COVID and the vaccine, is the three things were truth, ridicule, and parallel structures. And so truth is what you're talking. You guys are telling the truth about COVID. It's not that bad. Okay. We have in the United States, it's like a 99.95%. The worst you get is moderate symptoms. Okay. So this is nowhere near. In fact, I went over in a previous show, I really discussed it, everybody. I went over the 50 most dangerous diseases, and the top ones were like mad cow, rabies, brain-eating amoebas, and a bunch of other really disgusting stuff. But COVID wasn't even on the list. It wasn't even close to on the list of the most dangerous diseases.
There you go.
And so you put this in perspective, and that's the truth. So you got to have truth. The second thing is ridicule. And this is what Australians are particularly good at. We've watched Paul Hogan. We know about ridicule. Okay, he made fun of everything. And so this, but the funny thing is that's still you know, Americans' idea of Australians. You know, so like it ended with Paul Hogan with Crocodile Dundee 6 or whatever the last one was. You know, and then we stopped hearing about Australia until all of a sudden, wait a minute, what happened to those throw a shrimp on the Barbie people? And I spent 4 years in Melbourne. I never once threw a shrimp anywhere. I don't, let alone a Barbie.
That's,
you know,
right.
It's hysterical. Anyway, but the whole idea is ridicule is so important. If you can say, you know, if you're going to shorten everything, You know, Dictator Dan could become, you know, Dick Dan, you know, or whatever you want to do. I mean, make fun of him. Cartoons, ridicule, yeah. Talk about him, do videos, anything you do to make fun of this guy. Because what we've learned is that dictators have no sense of humor, none. They are devoid of emotions. They're all psychotics. That's what makes people dictators. Why would you want that much control over people? You got to be sick, first of all, to want that much control. Okay, so ridicule is critical. And the other one is parallel structures. And this is where Action Radio comes in. So we are, in fact, an alternative but viable citizen legislature working within the structure. We work within our Constitution here. Your Constitution, I really want to talk about. I'll get into that in a little bit. But the thing is, with Action Radio, with a citizen legislature, you're working within government. You're doing exactly what any special interest would do, any corporation, any wacko environmental group, anything. You're writing legislation and presenting it to government, you know, as a submission. So here, will you take this up? And of course, if they don't take it up and they don't, you know, consider the bills and they don't put them through a committee and they don't vote on them, you're free to unelect them. But the thing is, it gives you a reference point when they say, well, we're doing the best we can. And then we say, well, no, you're not. We actually have this bill that cures the problem that you say you're doing the best you can. So why don't you adopt our bill that we wrote for you because you don't have the courage or the ability to do it. And the one that comes to mind is the one that I think you mentioned you want to start with, which is vaccine product liability. So I took a very simple bill. And as I explained it, the way we write bills here, we'll write an introduction or a rationale. In other words, why do you want this bill? Part two, you put in, you know, the law as it exists now. And part three is how we're going to amend it. It's a very simple process. Intro, current law, proposed law. That's your plan for writing a bill. There's no big mystery. You don't need lawyers. You don't need to, you know, you don't have to go through all these committees and discuss and all this other kind of stuff. Let the legislature do that. That's their job. That's why we have an elected, you know, representative legislature is to legislate. And we want to get them back to doing that. But there's no reason we can't supply them the laws that we consent to be governed by. That's the whole philosophy here at Action Radio. So we're not forcing. We're not, we're not a violent revolution. We don't want to change the Constitution in terms of the process. The process actually is good. We want to make the process actually work, though. Work in terms of the people providing laws to the government and then the government regulating the special interests, and now it's just the opposite. The special interests, like Pfizer, are buying the government in order to regulate the people. So we need to reverse that process. So that's what we're trying to reverse that process.
Yeah.
But so what I want to create in Australia with you and all the folks in the truckers and all the citizens of Australia is a parallel structure. And the parallel structure is an alternative citizen legislature where you write the laws that you consent to be governed by. I'm not going to write them for you because I'm here in the United States, so I'm an American. It would be presumptuous of me to say to you, an Australian, here's what I think you should do, even though I've got some good ideas, I think. But it's really up to you. So you're going to write the language. You're going to propose the bill. So you can use our website, writeyourlaws.com. I've already talked to my webmaster about creating an Australian section. And I said, and while you're at it, why don't you make one for Canada, New Zealand, and Israel? Because we're going to need that too. So this is where we're going.
Awesome.
This is going to be worldwide. Go ahead. So what do you think so far? And then I have more, of course.
How's that all sound?
No,
look, it's really great. I mean, we want to be able to access what you've already done simply from the perspective that what one group of people want, you know, is a great starting point to help other people formulate what they may want as well. So to have this collective and then have this library or resource, you know, is invaluable, and it gives us a foundation to build from. And then you've got the collaborative aspect of bringing the different countries together. We're going to find that all our needs and all our desires are going to be the same.
Yep.
And it would
because the government be, all the know, governments that. Are the same. They all want power.
That's right.
You know, unjustified, yeah. unearned power. Yeah. Go ahead.
Well, this controlled demolition of democracy is, you know, what we've got to reverse. And I think that is the common thread that we're all experiencing, which is why our needs will be very similar, although the wording, like you said, may vary. I think the tone and the intent is going to be the same because we're all experiencing this. It's not exclusive to Australia. It's just the particular circumstances that we find ourselves in. Please continue. It's fascinating.
Okay. Oh, yeah. No, this is why I'm so glad to talk to you. Yeah. Like I say, I knew within like the first minute we were going to be able to do some amazing stuff. Where's I going to go with this? I had another thing I was going to tell you. Well, let me find out what you want to do. So when you get to Canberra, it's not Canberra, folks. Okay, it's Canberra. Assume my pronunciations. What do you want to do there? What are you proposing for Saturday? What are the goals of the demonstration?
Yeah, great question. So the goals, the inspiration is to send a very strong signal to government mm-hmm. that we're here and we're paying attention. And mm-hmm. for all of you that thought you joined the political arena and public life to have a cushy, isolated, privileged life and then retire off on a forever pension on the people's mm-hmm. purse and never really be accountable for anything, those days are over. And so this sends a very strong signal of that, because this is unprecedented, like I said, in our country. And for Australians to be prepared to do this, it's quite extraordinary, because we're not this type of people. We've never had to be before. So this is our version of war, the people standing up like this. So that's the first thing, is, the intention or the message that we want to send. The second thing is the togetherness. Mm-hmm. bringing the communities together, allowing people to connect, to validate themselves again, and to feel part of a community again. And you'll notice those are the first two things I've said. The third thing is to affect an actual change. What we ideally want is a dissolution of our government, which under the Westminster system, we can actually do. We can spill the government and we can recall for an election. Now, there is an election due. But the problem we've got with letting that election run is mm-hmm. there's only really two parties that can take it, and they're two sides of the same beast.
That's by design too, by the way. That's how politicians maintain power. They give you two parties, one of which controls everything, and the other which is controlled by the major party as the controlled opposition, or they just basically flip back and forth. But they all maintain the same power. So I noticed
that's
that
right.
Anytime you have a two party system, I have moves to. I want to abolish parties in the United States for members that are actually in legislatures. Parties should exist outside of government, but not inside. So that's something you might want to think about for reform. Ooh, how's that for an idea?
Well, that's the greatest thing that we could achieve out of this in the mm-hmm. short term is
right.
for our Governor General, who is supposedly the Queen's representative mm-hmm. here. And constitutionally, this is all illegal, what they've done to move the Queen out of here. So there's lots and lots of layers to the to what's going on in Australia right now, but we can call on the Governor General, who sits above the government, to mm-hmm. dissolve the government. This happened in the 1970s with Gough Whitlam.
What caused it?
What caused it then? Sorry?
What caused it to dissolve in the 70s? Yeah. No, I said, what caused the government to dissolve in the 70s?
Do you know, I'm not sure I'm going to give the most accurate answer here, but it was a change of government and some policies in particular that invoked it. And there was this great civil unrest and unrest in the parliament. So, and it was an opposing party to the Governor General.
Okay.
Believe it or not, which there's many, many layers to that. And I don't have the historical complete story, I'm afraid.
No,
I'm not
okay.
the best person to ask. But
you don't have to be,
so
you can always say, you always get back to me next week. You know, you never have to have all the answers today. I ask impossible questions, I'll tell you right now. I always ask impossible questions. Most of them require months of research. But this one's fairly easy. Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
Well, it may or not, I'm sure a quick Google will answer it. But the bottom line was that what the Governor General did was dissolve the parliament.
Okay.
And so it can be done, and it has been done. And this would be a great – and the people have the right to demand the Governor General do this, and based on the civil unrest. So we are – that would be a very powerful outcome. I mean, extremely powerful outcome. It's incredible if we were able to do that. At the mm-hmm. same time, we're sending a very, very specific message that we want the mandate regime to end. The discrimination, we have something called the locked out society. So we don't have apartheid, because in apartheid there's actually a place for, the haves and the have-nots to go. Here in Australia, there is no place for the have-nots. We are displaced. So if you don't participate in the injection program, you are displaced and you're shut out from society. So we want that to end, and we want them to leave the children alone. because that's really been the line in the sand. So our hopes and our intentions and our goals for Saturday is to send a very strong signal through the boots on the ground or the number of people that we have to say the people have awakened and the people are present and the people are watching, the people are demanding, and the people are not leaving until something changes. And at the moment, the arrogance of our state and federal governments is quite gobsmacking, because not only do they play us down, as I was saying before, you know, these right-wing neo-Nazis. If you saw me, I'm a middle-aged white woman. And it's like, you know, wearing glasses and you cannot get more not.
You're what
not
we call a soccer mom. About, you take the kids to the games and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. Well, here's the beauty of this. This is all by regular people. Action Radio is regular people. None of us, even me, I don't have a long career in broadcasting. I don't have a communications or a journalism or a broadcasting degree. I'm not a lawyer, yet I write laws all the time. You know, I mean, the things that you don't have to have a title. That's another way to exclude you from.
What you'll find in this movement is these are not long-term causes or you know, victim histories that people have suddenly now found a platform. These are people that are genuinely hurting, that whose lives have been destroyed, whose families have been torn apart, whose livelihoods have evaporated, and who have been outcast from society. These people are hurting. And instead of the government looking to respond to that and bring people, they vilify them. And so there is a need now on a humanity level for the Australian people to say that is not the future that we want our children to be walking into. That it's okay to watch somebody be rejected at the entrance to a hairdressing salon because they didn't participate in a medical experiment, or they felt that they didn't want something injected into their body, that they held the right to body autonomy and therefore they cannot participate. That's not the world that we want for the future, and it's certainly not the country that Australia set out to at some point to be, and it's definitely not why we sent our soldiers overseas and sacrificed so many. And you know what? It's not just the men who have died at war historically. It's all the families back here. Both my family, my own mother's father and my husband's my husband's father's father, were both killed in the Second World War, in active duty, and both of them were left behind with children. Now, we're talking back in the 1940s and 50s, where they didn't have support services. They didn't have anything, really, except the despair of someone coming to knock at the door to say, you know, your husband will never be returning. And that actually set those women of that era on a path of self-destruction, and both our grandmothers both had coping mechanism issues. You know, they both struggled through the rest of their lives and in raising their children. And we've had to be the generation to put the brakes on that to say, whoa, there's some historical DNA stuff going on here that we need to break the cycle on because, you know, that they were damaged goods. So there's a lot of stuff that, you know, they died for so that we would not have to ever be faced with the sorts of challenges that they faced and that their spouses faced. And so, you know, we've watched that through the generations, and we're meant to be at the point now where Australia should be this free-flowing, vibrant, not only economy, but also, you know, a thriving community. And we're not. And here we find ourselves in this 2020 dystopia. And so it's not okay, and the government's not doing anything, as all of our governments are, to heal those wounds that have been created through this current era. So historically, you know, we've paid the price, you know, and now we deserve the fruits of a wonderful continent that we live on. So the governments have let the people down, and I think it's probably fair to say that all governments let down all people all of the time. And once you can process that and get that into your head, that's a great quote by a great mentor of mine called Stuart Wilde. When you can process that and actually get that through to your head, you suddenly realize, oh, okay, so it's not historical, the price that we've all paid, and that from here on in there was going to be liberty, you know, life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. We're going to have to pay a price too. And how much is our freedom worth to us? So our goals and our intent here is to make sure that we are the next generation that will stand up and fight for the rights of our family, so that, again, the future generations can look forward to a vibrant life and all the things that, you know, our forefathers sacrificed for us. And and this is our calling. And we're here at a very exciting time in history.
Mm-hmm. I don't think people recognize how exciting and how significant this time is. No, that's great. I love all your information.
Right.
I just keep writing things down. You know, I go, we're up to a page and a half. it's great because I'll be going over this and keep this podcast too. You can share this. We'll be podcast about 5 minutes after the show ends. You'll probably be asleep by then maybe.
Oh,
but
great.
So you're able to share this everywhere. You got the link. It's already on your Facebook page. You can share it everywhere. A couple of things I thought of.
Great.
One, I have so much to ask you. We knew there were going to be problems. All of us who are in the Second Amendment community, those of us who are gun owners, and one of the things I like about Florida is I was able to get a concealed carry permit and regularly carry a gun. In California, I couldn't do that because California is a socialist place. So gun owners are like the canary in the coal mine. When they go after the gun owners, everybody else follows. So as soon as Australians gave up their guns, our hearts sank. It was like, you know, Alderaan blowing up, you know, when the Empire destroys it, you know, in Star Wars. We went, oh, no, not Australia. You know, of course, Canada, and they gave up their guns. Everybody gave up their guns. And all of us, you know, in the United States who believe in freedom, you know, we looked at that and went, wait a minute, you can't be free without your guns. If they're going to take your guns, they're going to take everything. And so we were looking at this. So when you say you didn't know it was coming, I'm not going to say that we did because we didn't know about COVID yet, but we knew that that's the precursor. That's the, you know, they killed the canary. They took the guns. Once that happens, you don't have, you know, you have your freedom sort of, but you don't have the implements to maintain your freedom because the government has guns. So I'm going to be working on a federal disarmament project here. I want to disarm our federal government, not the military. Okay. I'm talking about the government agencies, the bureaucrats, the officers who are armed to the teeth, the SWAT teams, the people that arrest people in the middle of the night for whatever reason they want and carry them away. We are living in a communist age right now. We are living in Marxist countries. We have dictators. Your premier, I guess, Victoria, is that what you call him? Yeah. He's an actual dictator.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And people don't recognize that. They think, dictators, you know, and then of course he asked the question, well, gee, how did the Germans let Hitler come to power? Well, same way, you know, everybody let these dictators come to power now. They were elected. You know, Hitler was elected. You know, and then he went crazy and did all the stuff he did. Okay, but you know, but if you look ahead, you can see what's going on. So if the gun issue, now, where were you? What were you when the guns were being taken? What were you thinking then? What was the country thinking then? I'm curious.
Well, it's a great question. We had a false flag event called the Port Arthur Massacre.
Okay.
And so it was a sunny Sunday afternoon, and at a tourist site, which was an original convict settlement camp in Tasmania, there were people with their families out looking at this old relic site, kind of like going to, you know, a national park.
Right.
And I think 30-something people died on that day. Interesting stuff I've looked at since then showing that physically it was impossible for the one shooter in one spot to have killed all of those people. But what it did was it shocked Australians into a realism of, wow, guns kill. We don't want to ever see that again. And so, and all the stories, you know, that they thrashed down our throats. When I look back at it now, it's a perfectly staged event. But what that did was it brought our country to its knees. I mean, it was absolutely horrific because we just didn't have those sorts of things happen here, even with guns. That's why I call it a false flag event, because it wasn't like we were having the mass shootings that you see in America, right? People weren't using guns. They were very rarely, you know, we didn't have an issue. They just wanted to disarm us. So we had this catastrophic event, and these beautiful young girls and their mum were murdered, and You know, they became the poster people for this, and their father, the only surviving member of the family, you know, they wheeled him out really well. And so that was the event that turned the tables, and the government said, look, we really need to take arms off everybody because we can't possibly have this happen again. And Australians went, oh, you're right. You know, we don't want to ever see a massacre like this again. So here, government, take our guns.
So why didn't the government give up the guns? If getting rid of guns is so bad, did anybody ask the question, we better get rid of the government guns too, because you never know, they could do the same thing. They could be just as violent as these criminals were. Did anybody, you know, think to make that argument?
Well, in 2020 or 2022, you know, that's a very reasonable and likely question. But
yeah,
back
but
then,
not then.
No,
yeah.
Because, because we didn't have issues. You know, we had gang warfare. You know, mafia drug warfare sort of stuff, but that was about it. You know, other than that, there'd be the occasional bank robbery with a, you know, sawn-off shotgun or something. But it just, guns and gun issues weren't part of our, we didn't have school shootings. Like I said, we didn't have all of the things that you see over in the States. But so it just, we weren't really a gun-possessing community, right? So generally speaking in America, you know, I mean, I've been to America dozens of times, literally dozens of times. And, you know, in Texas, they're just carrying them, right? Well, that didn't happen in Australia. We've never had that. We've never been like that.
I saw Quigley Down Under. Come on. I saw Tom Selleck and Quigley Down Under, and everybody there had a gun. That was in the 1800s. I'm just teasing you.
Oh, God. Anyway, so that's why it was easy to do, and it wasn't challenged, and no one questioned authority because it was such a heartbreaking situation, you know?
By design.
And it was played, like I said, it was perfectly orchestrated, and because it wasn't part of our psyche in the first place, so it wasn't like, even back then, it wasn't like going into America and asking Australians to surrender their guns. Back then, it would have been just as much trouble as it is today in America. For us back then, it wasn't part of a normal stuff anyway, city living, you know, which is where most people live. And so, you know, there was obviously reluctant people and there was still a black market and all that stuff. Don't get me wrong. You know, but we're all about beaches and Barbies and hanging out and, you know, what are you doing on the weekend? And very laid back. Which is why we were the soft touch in these times. Thought about those sorts of things.
Yeah, it's not just you in Australia. It's the Canadians too. In fact, Tuesdays, if you ever want to join our Canadian reporter, Laura Avalese, talks about Canadians. And because I was born in Canada, I was born in Toronto. And we talk about this exactly the same way. I mean, Canadians, you know, maple syrup, hockey. I mean, the most violence in Canada is at the hockey games. You know, but other than that, you know, Canadians they're all named Mackenzie. They all drink. They're all named Mackenzie. They all pour maple syrup on everything, and they live in the snow. I mean, that's what Canadians are. What's the problem
that's
here?
Funny.
And they're fierce too. Canadian fighters in the military have been fierce as well. So this is quite interesting. I want to introduce you to a friend of mine who's our medical freedom reporter, and that's Cindy Cagle. And so I want to get her. Let's see right now. Anyway, let's make her line live. And I want to bring her into the conversation. This is her report. Normally starts about 15 minutes ago, but I wanted to arrange this just because it's so special to have you on here. No, don't be sorry. No, I'm not saying that to make you feel guilty. I'm saying that because Cindy's nice enough to wait a little bit, and we're sort of preempting here a little bit. But I wanted to bring her to introduce you to another regular person who didn't ask for this, who didn't, you know, has this thrust upon her, but realizes that if you don't fight now, then it's only going to get worse. This is not going to get better. So, Cindy, welcome back to X-Ray.
Hey,
and we've got Jen Clark in Australia on the line.
Good morning. Hi, Jen. How are you?
Great, Cindy. Lovely to hear your voice.
Thank you. You as well. So I've just kind of been listening to what's going on over in Australia, and I'm anxious to look into the Melbourne experiment that kind of piqued my interest. And I've been saying for the last year and a half, as things go in Australia, which I'm just blown away that they're going the way they are, I fear that's what's coming to America, which is why I'm in the situation I'm in with our group.
We can tell her about you. Tell Jen about your group a little bit, because this might be something that they want to have their sort of adjunct to what's going on in Canberra. Is a medical freedom group that's actually studying these issues, and its members, it's healthcare, it's doctors, it's nurses, it's all kinds of folks. So that might be a good idea too, because I want to get you guys connected anyway. You too, Cindy.
Yeah, we started just in support of a local hospital here that was kind of the first to be up against the mandate of either get the vaccine or lose your job, which just seemed incredible in a country like the United States. So that started, a little later this time last year to support them. And then as our president rolled out his dictatorship mandates in
Brandon,
you know,
the insurrectionist.
You
can't say president on my show, sorry.
Sorry. it kind of morphed into supporting anybody faced with mask mandates and certainly being forced to get a vaccine to keep your job. And Citizens for Medical Freedom was born. And we've kind of, you know, paired up with a group of local doctors here in our area that, you know, speak a science that contradicts or offers a different opinion to what Dr. Fauci and the NIH and CDC here offer. And, you know, just kind of working with our legislatures and community support to push back. Greg often says we're winning. I don't know that I feel that way, but I'm in a position where I feel like I can be a voice that a lot of other people can't be. And we do what we can to bring attention and gain, you know, support from the community.
Jen?
Yeah. Incredible.
It's sad that this is, you know, what we're living in. And, you know, we have a small-based business, so we don't work for corporate America. We often say, you know, it would be so much easier to just go about our lives and wait till it's at our front door, because we really do feel like we're kind of at the back of the line where all of this is really going to land. There's so many people being affected by it, you know, here and now, that are living and working in fear and in silence. But I'm very disappointed in the American resolve to fight back. It's almost like we've been conditioned to become China. That's just, you know, from history, what I've learned in school about history, it doesn't seem like we're the Americans that, you know, our founding fathers came from, and I don't know how to get that back.
I do, he said arrogantly. I know exactly how to get it back. We start writing new laws that we consent to be governed by. This is why I created Action Radio. Cindy, that's great. That is absolutely, you've encapsulated the whole problem. I was fascinated and disgusted at the same time with the rapidity at which Americans, the land of the free and the home of the brave, allegedly, gave up our rights. People closed businesses because they were told to close businesses. You know, and I'm thinking, what the hell are they doing that for? Except for the few people that rebelled, and they were, of course, arrested. See, the problem was, if everybody stayed open and said, you know, basically, you know, up yours kind of thing, you know, we wouldn't have had this problem. If people said, wear a mask, are you crazy? No, I'm not going to put a face diaper on my face. I'm not going to put a petri dish there. No, you can't make me do that. That's the America of old. That's the greatest generation. The folks that fought World War II that Jen was talking about earlier, the people that sacrificed for freedom in other countries so that other countries wouldn't have to live like we are now.
Yeah.
You know, and so this is fascinating. Right. And in Australia, it's even worse because you're even a more compliant population. What I find interesting, though, is, and I want to, this is a big sort of question. I don't even know if you want to get into this with your protest, but I was reading your constitution. There is no provision for individual rights in your Australian constitution. You're still technically British subjects. You know, the Queen is still the head of Australia. The Governor General is the Queen's representative. You can dissolve the Parliament, but there's the only thing, the closest thing I found was on religious freedom. You basically adopted part of our First Amendment, giving people religious freedom. But even then, I'm sure they closed the churches in Melbourne, probably in the rest of Australia. But would you, you know, you don't have to do this now and for this thing Saturday, but would you be interested in putting together another section of your constitution concerning individual rights, so you don't have to worry about this in the future? Jim, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, we need a Bill of Rights. There's no question about that. We don't have one. So that is something we need to work on. But we do have, very interestingly, in our constitution, there's been many illegal changes made to it because amendments to the constitution cannot happen without a referendum of the people. And they've been illegally changed. Yeah. They've been illegally changing our constitution without referendum.
Where?
But they did have one in 1947. So this is immediately after the Second World War. There was a referendum and a constitutional amendment made that said that no Australian can be conscripted to a medical service. Now, they did that on the back of Second World War because they saw what happened to people. I mean, the atrocities of the Hitler regime was not just gassing people in gas chambers. They did all sorts of horrific medical experiments on their own people even. And so post that war, the Australian Constitution was amended so that an Australian citizen would never be exposed to any kind of medical conscription by government. So the way that our, and they've totally just blown that. And the reason for it is because it's a bit like, the best way I explain it to people, the Constitution sits above everything. We sit above the Constitution. So the people of Australia are supreme beings. Then there is the Constitution, which underpins that supreme beingness, right? Then you've got the federal government, the state government, and their respective laws. But the Constitution, they've mowed over the top of that like it was a reed, because for me to challenge that and say, but wait a minute, the Constitution clearly states this, does not stop them from saying, well, you don't have a job with us anymore. It's then up to me to fight that through the court system that will not schedule me a court date, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they know that. And this is the criminality of it, and this is what most Australians don't understand because teaching constitution in the 1970s. So the 1970s was a real big turning point. It was a very significant turning point in how we got to where we are right now. And that's the same decade that, you know, there was the spill of government that I mentioned at the start. So what's happened here is a complete abuse of our constitution. So everything our governments have been doing since the 70s is criminal. And these other things that happened, when you passed your 1986 Act, we passed a very similar one called the Australia Act, which is all illegal. And then in 1999, they tried to make us a republic, which would have meant that we were autonomous and that it would be by absolute rule whoever was in charge. But the Australian public rejected that. But you know what? The United Nations and the Australian government of the day and every government since that day went ahead anyway and set us up as if we were a republic and have treated us that way ever since, as if we don't have these constitutional Commonwealth rights, which, as it turns out, thank God, right? Because if they were an absolute government right now, this would be even deeper and darker. But they've been acting that way since 1986, and the United Nations was the catalyst. It's incredible, the history in this particular element. But tying it back to the Constitution and what you were saying there, our Constitution does have some good protections, but we as Australians do not have a Bill of Rights. Victoria does have a Human Rights Act, but it's all water. And at the end of the day, none of it mattered, right? So that's really what we've got to work on. We do need a Bill of Rights. That's something that I do want to definitely develop something there. But we need to get our Constitution reinstated because we have great people on the ground here that are doing fantastic, like phenomenal work on on our rights through the Constitution and putting court cases together, getting the court cases listed in our High Court, which is the only place the constitutional challenges can be held,
mm-hmm.
but the courts won't schedule a date, right?
Of course not. Why would they? That's the same reason our Supreme Court
exactly.
didn't take the election challenge of Texas.
They'd
lose?
Yes. Yeah. So that's our challenge, though, is, you know, we can write whatever we want, and we need to write it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We need to do this work for our future generations. However,
right.
getting it actually, getting above the government and not allowing them to do what they've done, which is literally, like I said, mow over it like it's a bad weed,
mm-hmm.
And they don't make any reference to it. But you know what? When it came to mandating the injections, you know what happened? They're not mandated because they can't, according to the Constitution. They can't force the people of Parliament or the people in the judicial system to get vaccinated. So they're not. Right?
Wait a minute. So the government's not getting vaccinated, but the people are? By mandate
Correct.
And by passport and everything else. Oh, that's fascinating. I've muted Cindy's line. Just Cindy, you got some background noise in your line, and because we got an Australia call here, I want to see if we can eliminate as much background noise as possible to get Jen as clear as we can. So I'm going to bring you down, but if you can, whatever you can do to quiet the background noise, is going to help. Now, this is fascinating to me, Jen. I really want to talk about this idea of being a Commonwealth, being still connected to the British Crown as opposed to being a republic. Because your understanding of a republic and my understanding of a republic are actually polar opposites. So when you say a republic, you're saying that the government can then act like dictators and rule over the people. The definition of a republic, as I understand it, first of all, in the United States, our Constitution, you know, our government is under God. And so God is, you know, you have your birthright is from God, you know, and it's a higher power than government. So in other words, our country is based on a belief that government is subordinate, you know, to the rights of the people. The rights of the people come from God as a birthright. Therefore, government can neither grant nor take away rights. That is a fundamentally different orientation than you have in Australia, it seems, because if your view of a republic is that the government under a republic is basically a dictatorship, that's the reverse of what a republic is, as
no,
I
no.
understand it.
No.
Okay.
Let's
clear that
up. That's not... Yeah, good. So what I mean is, under the original, I'll talk it in business terms. The original
okay.
deal in 1901
mm-hmm.
was
okay.
that we would have these rights, and we would have a constitution, and we would be one united country as a federal body.
Right.
And so that was put in place by the Queen. What they've done is they replaced the Queen and the Commonwealth with a fictitious character. So think like Disneyland. They created this fictitious character called the Queen of Australia. And what I'm getting at is they've been been operating illegally, right, for all this time. And had we have not had something like that, we can't call them back. We couldn't call them back on anything because they may have been able to push through the rights to do everything they're doing right now. But instead,
mm-hmm.
what they've done is lied and cheated to get there. And now we can say, wait a minute, that goes against, right?
Mm-hmm. No,
this
is...
The Federation
yeah.
of Australia.
Yeah. Mm.
So that's what I mean. I wasn't advocating or un-advocating for a Republican structure at all. But what we've been able to do is say, wait a minute, that's not the original 1901 Federation Agreement. That's not under our Constitution that formed part of that. And that the Queen of Australia that you refer to and that you swear oath to, so they say swear oath to the Queen of Australia. It may as
well they do that because it's not an oath. So they swear an oath to something that doesn't exist, therefore it's not an oath. Therefore, they're not
exactly.
bound by it.
Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I see how this
exactly.
works. Yeah. So this is
it's absolute piracy at its best. Like this is mm-hmm. this is the best pirate movie ever invented going on right here in Australia right now.
Well, here's this is actually good news because you don't have to redo, rewrite, go through the system of reforming your constitution. It sounds like I think I can see some changes I'll suggest to you, but I can see that what this really is the same problem we have here, getting the constitution enforced, forcing people to go buy the constitution. You know, just to get back to the gun reference, every gun control law is unconstitutional because it touches the right of the people to own and carry firearms. Every law that invades your person and creates a medical apartheid society where you've got, instead of the haves and have-nots, it's not the black and white separation, it's the government compliant versus the government resistant. You know, and so those of us who actually are free and independent and wish to remain free and independent, we're on the right side of this. Okay, because you're free to get a vaccine if you want. You're free to take the snake oil. It's fine. It's not fine. But I mean, in other words, if you make that choice, I'm going to try and advise you not to do it, but I'm not going to stop you. Whereas the other side wants to stop us from being free, from exercising our own personal judgment and our own health. And this goes against the Nuremberg Convention. This is, I call Dr. Fauci Dr. Fascist. And for those of you that haven't heard the full title in Australia, that's Dr. Fascist, the genocidal, psychopathic, narcissistic, avaricious, pathologically lying vaccine drug pusher. That's his official title here on Action Radio. You may adopt that. You might have to listen to the podcast to get it, but there it is. So medical apartheid is why. Well, thank you. This is why I brought Cindy into Action Radio, because they have, in fact, Cindy, why don't you talk about that bill about the information for doctors? Because my next question for Jen is going to be, do you have an equivalent of America's Frontline Doctors or Doctors for Freedom or things like that? So we have a bill. Where's that bill stand now? Cindy, did it get passed? Or is it in committee? The bill, the truth in medicine for doctors where they can speak freely.
It is exactly that. It's free speech for healthcare professionals, because what we've got going on over here is, doctors that are speaking out, and I should point out that it's only the independent doctors that are speaking out. The others that are under these hospital umbrellas or receiving funds from Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, they're toeing the line. But the doctors that are speaking out and offering alternative treatments that have been effective and safe are being threatened to lose their licensing. They're being censored. So legislation was drafted to offer them the protection of free speech and not have these medical boards coming down on them threatening to take their license. It's gone through two of our committees, the Health Policy Committee and the Judiciary Committee, and it's passed both. The next stop is our Appropriations Committee. We're having to do things like that to give them the basic opportunity to have that doctor-patient relationship of speaking about independent medical treatment. Which is just, it's crazy. But if you're speaking out against, Dr. Fauci and NIH, CDC hospital protocol, then you're threatened to lose your livelihood and never practice medicine again. And some of these doctors have even taken the vaccine themselves, have taken the vaccine, have gotten COVID, and are offering that information to the public, and that's not allowed.
So for Jen, would this be helpful to you? I mean, like I said, this is why I want to get you guys connected so that you can talk about, and share model legislation like this one. It might be useful. But what's the situation with doctors in Australia? Would a truth in medicine bill, Jen, be helpful to you there, for example?
I love the sound of it, and I know my medical friends would love the sound of it as well.
Okay.
So the threats that they make to you over there, Cindy, they actually have carried out here in Australia. So they have deregistered doctors here. I have two I know of myself. One was an anesthetist, and he just simply said, this is crazy what we're doing here. And he happened to put it on his social media. So his 32-year career was ended. And he's up against the board for disciplinary matters right now. Then there's another doctor that lives about 10 minutes from me. Dr. Mark Hobart is his name. So if you want to look up his story, the police raided his clinic, and I mean raided it. They took all the medical records of his clients, and he's also now not able to practice. I have a personal friend who was a nurse for 26 years, and she was not prepared to take the injection. So she was dismissed for insubordination.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, yeah, not carrying out your superior's instructions.
Mm.
And so these are good medical people, but we have a governing body here called the Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency. It is a government agency, but they've moved it one away from government itself. So they create these fictitious, seemingly independent bodies, but they're actually just government departments. But AHPRA, the acronym, has the heaviest hand and control. They even send in mystery shoppers to doctor's surgeries to make sure that the doctor will vaccinate and that won't talk them out of it or won't have an honest discussion with them. And so what they've done here is they've used this as an opportunity to flush out and to deregister all those doctors. And the same thing's happened with lawyers as well. Deregister all the independents so that they can no longer practice. And that leaves us with a corporate medical system and a corporate medical structure. Our hospitals are not run by doctors who then have assistance in the forms of medical specialists and administrators to carry out what's required. Our hospital system is run by administrations, and doctors are told what to do and how to do it. So everything's inverted here, and it's a totalitarian, very tightly held operation to control it all. If a doctor issues an exemption, they must register that exemption with AHPRA, and AHPRA review every single medical exemption, and they decide ultimately whether or not that medical exemption is approved. So
what's that organization again? What's it called? AHPRA? How do you spell it? The acronym?
AHPRA, Australian Health Practitioner Regulation Agency. So H for Harry, P for Peter, R for Robert, A for agency. So AHPRA is the acronym,
okay.
AHPRA.gov.au if you want to have a look at it. So AHPRA is the overarching body, and this is, I think, a potential axis of evil that we need to find out how to deregister. I believe AHPRA needs to be decommissioned.
It sounds like our CDC is what it sounds like. It sounds like, Cindy, what do you think? Does this sound like the CDC issuing guidelines, which are really mandates because people are taking them as mandates?
Yeah, exactly. I do. And weaponizing these medical boards.
That's right.
Yeah.
It is weaponizing the medical boards, absolutely. And what it's doing is it's disenfranchising anybody who doesn't comply.
Yeah.
And then, but they don't leave it there. They then pursue them legally.
Wow.
It's absolutely gone. Yeah. So my friend Dr. Paul, who was the anaesthetist, you know, he's facing disciplinary action right now. We've got doctors and nurses, you know, in medical cases and paramedics and all those sorts of people all in legal sort of battles. And some of them they've started themselves, but but these agencies will go after them for malpractice. There's all sorts of, the best way I can put it is shenanigans. There's all sorts of shenanigans going on. And the problem is that this is like very, very serious. It's playing with people's lives, with their livelihoods, you know, destroying their reputations. And in the meantime, we then have massively understaffed medical services, which they're blaming on the unvaccinated.
That sounds
familiar.
Cindy?
Yeah, we've heard all this. It's the same broken record, which leads me, you know, to my inevitable conclusion,
right,
which I came up
with
a while ago.
Yeah.
This has all been planned. This has been, you know, I did shows a year ago 100%. On how the vaccine came out 10 years before the virus. They actually engineered the vaccine, engineered the program, ran it through Agenda 201, practiced this all ahead of time. Dr. Fascist came out in, you know, right after Trump, actually the week before Trump was, when was it? No, he came out, week before the inauguration of Trump in 2017 and said, he's going to have a pandemic. I said, oh, that's interesting. How do you know? You know, and of course, 3 years later, you know, we got
that's
COVID.
That's right. Yeah, he did. Yeah.
I've got a whole, let me send you my timeline. I'll make a little note to myself here to send you the timeline. But I've asked Jonathan Mosley to call in. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Jen.
No, I'm just saying I've seen the film clip with Fauci that saying that, you know, there was going to be a pandemic during Trump's presidency. So, oh, thanks for the heads up on that.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, here's what's interesting. A little different question I just thought of right now. One of the things I've talked about that I don't think anybody else in the country has talked about is the fact that we had guidelines in 2007. It was the interim pandemic guidelines, and they had something called the Pandemic Severity Index. And what it said was they had five categories of pandemic. And you had category one and two, which is like, advisory, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, you know, all the way up to category five, which is full lockdown. Now, what not only did Dr. Fascist announce that the pandemic was coming, thanks, Dr. Fascist, but the week after, no, so 3 months later, 3 months after Trump's inaugural, they changed the guidelines to the 2017 guidelines. And guess what they got rid of? They got rid of the Pandemic Severity Index. So then they could go to full lockdown immediately. So under the old guidelines, this could not have been, this is how I know this is all planned, because they changed the guidelines 3 years before COVID hits. Okay, knowing that COVID was coming, because Fauci already announced it, right? And they changed the guidelines so they go to full lockdown immediately. So you want to talk about cheating and planning? Same thing here. This is like a replay of the record. I got someone to introduce you to. You can react to that, but I'm going to bring Pianki on the line too, one of our great callers and citizen legislators. He's got 901 bill, I think a couple more also that he's authored as well. So Pianki, let's get Jim. What do you, let's get your reaction to. Do you have the same thing, changing guidelines, changing laws, changing things that allowed these mandates to come in without the usual precautions and safeguards? Then we get to Pianki. Jen?
Do you mean, do the government?
Did they do that? Did they change your guidelines in advance? Did they change the way things were done, or did this all come about after COVID? In other words, was there pre-planning that you can point to and say, wait a minute, you knew this was coming. You know, here's where you changed the laws. Here's where you changed the guidelines. I found it here, but I'm just wondering if there's an equivalent in Australia where they took your medical guidelines, your precautions, protections, things like that, got rid of them a few years maybe before the false pandemic hit. I mean, COVID's a real virus, but the pandemic is something totally different because we had cures for that when it came out. But I'll talk about that next too. Were there any kind? I'm all over the place here. I'm sorry. Guidelines, changes, law changes, allowing the government to do things they couldn't do before.
Yes.
Okay. Got an example? You don't have to have one now. I'm just curious.
Yeah.
Anything you can think of?
I was going to say before. Sorry.
Oh no, I just.
Yeah, so they knew, well, first of all, if we zoom out again, for people that don't know about the World Bank, all the governments were buying COVID-19 medical kits in 2017 and 2018.
What?
And the
what?
Internet.
Say that again? Wait a minute. This is news. World Bank was doing what?
Okay. All the governments were buying COVID-19 test kits in 2017 and 2018.
Hold the presses. This deserves the Chinese gong, because this is breaking news here. All right, so this is what I do when I'm making a list. Now that I have your attention, everybody, the Chinese virus has now taken on a whole new dimension here, because governments were 2 years before COVID-19, they were buying kits for COVID-19. How the hell did they know? Of course, the answer is because they helped design it. COVID-19 kits?
So,
go ahead, tell me more. This is great.
I will send you through the links to the actual website so you can see them. So what happened, this came to light in 2020. And they were listing how many units every country had ordered over the years of 2017, 2018. What they did, though, in 2020, when this came out and people were circulating the information, they went back to the original website and amended COVID-19 test kits to medical test kits. But they couldn't tinker with the Wayback Machine, and they were already too late for people like me that screenshot everything. So you can still verify the information so you can still verify that information that I've just mentioned then. So that's zooming out onto a global level. But if you zoom back in onto Australia to answer your question in particular, there's many, many of those. So I'm just going to speak of the one that immediately sprung to mind, which isn't medically related, but it is infrastructure related. So in September last year, our federal government tabled a document. When we say tabled, it means, you know, lodged a document that showed the plan for Australia through to 2030 in terms of infrastructure. And one of the items in that is to do with the 5G network. Now, this infrastructure report was put together. Yeah, it was put together in 2018 to 2020, and then finally presented to the government in 2021. So again, pre-COVID, and it talks about how the Australian infrastructure system will be installing 5G on every public piece of property that they can, including park benches, bus stops, waste bins, anything that's street furniture will all be charged with 5G antennas or whatever the structure is, so that they literally can bathe us in 5G network. So they were working on these things that have come about in this last couple of, or that have come to our attention in the last couple of years. They've been working on those things for some time. Also, the Strong Cities Network is another one that's a very easy one for me to point to, because these are things that you can easily find online. That's why I'm mentioning them. Mm-hmm. The Strong Cities Network, Melbourne or Dan Andrews signed up the Strong Cities Network. It's a Rockefeller Foundation funded program.
Of course it is.
The Strong Cities Network is a United Nations World Economic Forum joint venture initiative. Now, I don't know if you know this, but in July 2019, the World Economic Forum and the United Nations signed a memorandum of understanding. Again, you can simply Google that. Just type in United Nations World Economic Forum memorandum of understanding June 2019 and it'll come up. So basically, they formed a partnership in 2019. Winding that back to what I was talking about with Strong Cities Network, so it's a UNWEF initiative from 2015. So Dan Andrews, the Premier of Victoria, put his hand up and said, well, we don't only want to be a part of it, we want to be the lead city. So the Rockefeller Foundation funded a guy by the name of Toby Kent to come in and be Melbourne's Chief Resilience Officer from the period of 2015 to 2019. So his tenure finished up right about the first day that we heard about COVID-19 was something that was going on. And so the mainstream media, one of our national newspapers, interviewed Toby Kent when he was first appointed to this job back in 2015 and said, what are you out to achieve? You know, what do you think you're going to do? And he said, well, my number one goal, and again, this is all public record, my number one goal is to prepare Melbourne for the number one concern that we have, and that is an incoming pandemic. So in 2015, of all the things that you could have prepared a major city for, he thought that a pandemic was the one thing that he should prepare Melbourne for. And in part of his preparations, he created things like, emergency buttons for when, hospitals get overloaded, which of course they pushed the button through the pandemic and, So I don't know how someone in 2015, funded by Rockefeller, United Nations WEF initiative program, comes to Melbourne and they spend 4 years preparing for a pandemic that then comes into reality just days after this guy ends his tenure. So like I said, these are very easy items of public record that you can find easily online that show you that they were preparing for this. And they knew it was coming.
Well, of course, because they knew. That's more proof this has all been engineered. You know, they think we're stupid. That's one of the advantages we have over these people. They think we're stupid. We're not. You know, we find things out. We've got the Wayback Machine. The evidence is there. I found the 2007 guidelines. There are people. This is what makes this time of Action Radio and worldwide communications, instant communications, so wonderful, because we can share all this stuff. And we can go and look and see that the same thing happened in Australia that happened here. It happened in Canada. It happened in Israel. Israel's the most vaccinated country out there. There's in all these problems, all governments are doing exactly the same thing. They're like psychopathic narcissists or psychopaths in general. They're predictable. And so we can use their predictability.
They are
indeed. Yeah, I got a couple of folks to introduce you to. In fact, I knew this was going to happen. I was kind of hoping it would too. First of all, I got Pianki on the line. Pianki's in either Missouri or Louisiana. And then we've got our lawyer who does a legal report, Jonathan Mosley, whose report's coming up in 10 minutes anyway. I'm so glad, Jen, you can stay for all this time, because you're going to get a really interesting group of folks to talk to here, and I think some valuable resources. And after we're off the air, I'm going to add you to we have an Action Radio chat group. You're going to go in it. And so you'll be able to talk to all the people you're talking to now as reporters. And Pianki, well, you can always get him too. Pianki, welcome to the show, to Jen Clark from Melbourne, Australia.
Well, good morning to you, Greg. Good morning and welcome to Jen here in the Action Network. But, you know, when the more and more you listen to this, and especially when you bring people from other parts of the world, there's a semblance in their story and the names that they mention. It's very important to identify who this they is in practically any combination. And we find that if we jot down the names, we keep hearing these names in Australia. We probably hear these names in France. We probably hear these same names where people are speaking of. You know, it gets to a point when people are talking on a particular issue, and no matter how wild it sounds, Greg, all these people cannot be lying. It has to be something to it.
Yeah. Well,
and one
I,
of the
I was,
key things that
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We here with Australia, like we try to prevent and maintain here in the United States, is the ability for citizens to be well-armed. Because
yeah, we talked about
they,
that.
This,
we yeah, talked
about
that before
take
came
that
on. Yeah.
I mean, it's like walking down the street butt naked, and everybody is talking for that.
That's funny. Well, Jen, let me get your reaction to that. Then I'm going to introduce you to Jonathan. We've got, like I say, we've got four of us. I love this. We've got, you know, international calls. We've got all our regular folks. We're spread around the country. And if, like I say, eventually we're going to have Australia, New Zealand, Israel, and Canada all on the line at the same time. It's going to be fascinating. Jen, a reaction to what Bianchi's saying?
Oh, absolutely. The commonalities are shocking but not surprising. And I should just mention it is it's 12:30 in the morning and there's a helicopter hovering over my house.
Isn't that interesting? I'd like to welcome the members of the Australian government and the Australian Secret Police who are listening to us right now. If you want to spell my name right, it's Greg Penglis, G-R-E-G-P-E-N-G-L-I-S. You want to come to me, here I am. Okay. Broadcasting from Milton, Florida. Yeah. I don't make any secrets of that. So as I want to welcome the members of the FBI, KGB, and any other secret police force who happens to be tuning in at this time. Speaking of which, let me introduce you to Jonathan Mosley, who is a criminal defense attorney, Second Amendment specialist, constitutional attorney near the swamp in Washington, and was there January 6th for the what we call the Capitol Hill Invitational Walk-In. And I want to, the reason I asked Jonathan to call in a little early is because we – as soon as Jen Clark mentioned that they're going after lawyers, they're deregistering lawyers in Australia, I thought, I got to get Jonathan in on this because maybe there's some lawyer groups here that can work with lawyer groups there, doctor groups here that can work with doctor groups there. And so I find this all quite fascinating. So, Jonathan, welcome back here. We've got Jen Clark from Australia. How you doing, sir?
Well, good morning. Well, thank you for making the effort to be all the way around the country. And I'm sorry I didn't hear the whole thing.
It's podcast. You'll catch it.
But I'm just wondering because I don't know if you already covered the Gateway Pundit is talking about Arizona gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake on 60 Minutes Australia.
Oh,
did you see that?
I haven't talked about it yet. Jen, do you know about that?
What is it? Sorry.
It was an interview with Arizona's candidate. Carrie Lake, who's very much involved in say the recount, and she was apparently on the Australia version of 60 Minutes, and trying to get to the bottom of what's the difference between Australia and what's happening there in Australia and what's happening in the United States, and she's saying, one of the takeaways is that basically the main reason this is no, it doesn't say the name of the reporter, the main difference is that we have the Second Amendment to back up our freedoms.
It keeps coming up. Jen, it keeps coming up. Once we take away the guns, we all get crazy here. Was there election fraud in Australia? Let me ask that question, because that's what Carrie Lake is particularly concerned with, as is Arizona. We're waiting for them to decertify Brandon. And as soon as they decertify, hopefully Wisconsin and I think either Georgia or Pennsylvania might be next. And we're trying to get Brandon, below his 270 electoral college threshold, which would basically make him invalid, which he already is. But we're just going to go for that. But general question, election fraud in Australia. The premier, Dictator Dan Andrews, I think was his name, is Do you have the same kind of fraud that we have here? Do you have a party stuffing ballots? And in other words, is your government legitimate or is it stolen? Jen.
Totally stolen. And this is a very hot topic right now. And,
okay.
Dan Andrews' own people have turned him in to be investigated for that very line of corruption, which is called branch stacking here.
What's it called?
It's called what?
Branch stacking.
Branch stacking. Okay. As we get more callers, as we get more callers, it's a little harder to hear Jen. So I'll keep you on the line, but I want to just, I don't know, Jen, either speak just a touch louder or get your mic, you know, a little closer or something like that, just to make sure we get that. Otherwise, you know, we can I'll have folks call, you know, leave and then call back in.
Well, she's calling
too late
from the future. It should be harder.
She's calling from tonight. Yeah, okay.
So you did ask a specific question I don't want to ignore. I just was wondering, context, of course, the attack on – you remember that I think it was Shakespeare, whatever, kill all the lawyers, I think was in context, was intended to be meant in order to control the population, in order to take control. Not that lawyers are necessarily all that great. It's more the intent of totalitarianism to prevent people from asserting their rights and their freedoms. I mean, there's plenty of bad lawyers, but the idea that totalitarianism, you know, the dictators come and try to take away the, you know, centers of resistance is, you know, in our American traditions, maybe not explicitly in the Constitution so much, but the idea that we have multiple centers of influence, multiple centers of power, the family, the church, you know, community organizations, and people don't understand what it means to be a communist. It doesn't mean that they're Russian and wear, you know, furry hats. It means a philosophy that came out of Germany and Austria, not Russia. And those attitudes have been systematically weaken and destroy any competing influence in, you know, to the government. So, you know, there is an attack on lawyers. People don't reason. For example, I'm not allowed to tell you that, you know, a judge is an idiot or corrupt or something like that. And where else are you going to hear it but from the lawyers who appear before that judge? And yet the rules don't allow me to tell the public what's really going on in the court. And so the access to information is under attack, and the ability of lawyers to challenge things. And like even in the January 6th criminal defense things, they are trying to deprive the defendants of their lawyers by attacking them, you know, with like one lawyer had 17 different defendants, and that's okay. But someone who's actually speaking up, like me and other lawyers, they're under attack for the slightest idea. So I don't know what you're saying. I think is a, you know, if that's happening in Australia, of course it's a worldwide tactic that is going on. And I think that, you know, it's a very alarming way to, well, in one sense to say, well, you have these freedoms, but you really don't because you can't enforce them.
Yeah, see, this is
well,
scary. Thing. This is the idea of lawyers being decertified. This is the first I've ever heard of that. This is why I wanted Jonathan to weigh in. But Jen, if you can comment on Jonathan's comments and anything else you can add to the decertification of lawyers, then we'll get back to doctors. But why are they taking away the lawyers?
Well, any lawyer that was not towing the line and was prepared to represent people that were pushing back on the system were targeted. And the first one to fall was a woman lawyer here in Melbourne. And she had lodged a claim against the government for the hard lockdown of some high-rise people. So we had an incident here where it was Saturday afternoon, and all of a sudden the police and some military personnel rolled up on the front door of these apartment buildings, high-rise towers or public housing buildings, and just locked them down for 14 days with no notice. And so they were locked in.
Locked them in?
You know, poorly
locked them in their apartments?
Locked them in. Mm-hmm.
Oh, jeez.
Just like you saw in Wuhan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, China.
And with no credit. So she lodged a claim that she was going to win because all of this is illegal. We all know that. And so what they did, so she crowdfunded into her trust account, which is what lawyers do. Bottom line was that they deregistered her in the most humiliating way. One of our national newspapers rung her on a Friday morning at 9 a.m. to ask her what she thought about her deregistration. She said, well, thank you for letting me know. They seized her company and the bank account. Yep. They seized her company and her bank account, and they instructed another legal firm to do a full audit of the, she'd had $670,000. It could be $620,000. Don't quote me on the number. I think it was $670,000 she had collected sitting in the trust account because, you know, she was doing all sorts of class actions and she was going to win. So so they took her company, took the funds and audited it all. And, of course, the audit bill came in, you know, at the same amount of money that she had in the bank account, basically. Is the last I heard. So they broke her in every way, and they deregistered her so that she cannot practice law anymore in this country. So she was the first one to fall. And then some have gone after her, the same as the doctors. So again, they've used this as an opportunity to weed out the independent, free-thinking radicals, if you like, and decommission them so that they're no longer a problem. And none of our human rights lawyers, other than Serene, that's her name, Serene Tefaha, none of the well-known, none of the celebrity type, big gun, big shot human rights people came to the people. It really is. But I was looking for a piece of footage while you were talking because I thought it would add a great bit of fun to this, if I may just divert us for a moment. So what?
Oh, please, please divert. I love diversions.
It's on point, but it's a bit of humor.
Okay.
So we have a new political party. A lot of people have sparked up, you know, to run independent, all that sort of thing. And so one of them is a guy by the name of Ricardo Bozzi, who's an ex-army serviceman, and he started a political party. Well, he flew from New South Wales to South Australia, and when he landed at the airport, he was unmasked. So he was fined because he would not put a mask on and had a court case. And because he was in another state, he attended that court case via Skype. Zoom.
Okay.
And his court case was aired for everybody to hear, and he read out a pre-prepared speech. And I'm just trying to find the actual speech because it's hilarious. It only goes for a few minutes. But basically, the key points are Ricardo called the magistrate an imbecile. He said, at best, you're an imbecile.
This is Australians we're talking about here. You know, the shrimp on the barbie country.
Yeah, right? Actually, this is what he said. I found the quote. He said, you have no standing. You are at worst a traitor and at best an imbecile, the truth of which will be determined in due course.
That's beautiful. Well, here's what I want to do now, because we have that's great, because we have the extra folks online. I want to get Jonathan's comment on the fact that the lawyers are being decertified, and then I'm going to go around. We'll go Cindy, Pianchi, and then me. We'll just kind of rotate around so everybody gets a chance to talk to you. Jonathan, do you have some lawyer groups that can help the Australian lawyer groups? And are there Australian lawyer groups? I don't know. Jonathan?
Well, I think that they should speak out in favor of it. But what can I say other than the obvious? This is a very problematic, disturbing situation, especially when, like I say, when the rules, the bars associations that handle this are themselves very left-wing, and increasingly left-wing means socialist. So they're not, you know, as Chris Plant, the radio show here in D.C. says, they're not on our side. It's one of his sayings. And but people need to know that when they don't hear any warning from lawyers, that doesn't mean everything's okay. It means the lawyers are not allowed to tell you. And you know, so things are happening like that are bad. And one of the things they're doing, because they can disbar people frivolously and dishonestly. Therefore, they can keep the public from knowing that not only are most law firms in the United States left wing, which, like I say, is coming to mean socialist, if not worse, but the bar associations are too, and the bar associations, you know, mainly pitch and choose the favored law firms and attack anyone who is a who is a dissident or someone they can't control, someone won't play ball. And so it is a very disturbing thing. That's why I say, you know, normally, I don't know when, you know, decades ago, if this were happening, the all of the supposed civil rights groups in the United States would be screaming bloody murder in solidarity with the attorneys in Australia. The problem is these days, those in this country are also doing the same thing. They're part of the problem. They're not, you know, they're not going to defend the freedoms of the people by making sure they have lawyers, because they're doing the same thing here. It's very hard to find conservative lawyers or even just honest lawyers the way they used to be. I mean, the ACLU is a joke. They're the American Communist Lawyers Union. And I mean, people need to realize, and again, we've talked about how did we get here, because we were asleep, you know, when for decades, when conservatives, like back to Phyllis Schlafly and everybody else, warned us these things were happening. Everybody goes, nah, that's overblown. That you're exaggerating. It'll never get to that point. And unfortunately, those warnings from signs were correct. And so, you know, it's sad to say, but the reason we're in the mess we're in is because we just slept and let it happen.
Well, time's
and,
just that.
And as we're seeing,
yeah.
As we're seeing, the more that the left is used to the fact that the conservatives aren't going to actually do anything, the more it's accelerated.
Yeah. Jen, what do you think?
100% spot on. Same here.
Yeah.
Getting people willing to speak up. Yeah.
Well, I'm going to take a chance. I'm going to get Jen complete her thought, and then we'll go to Jonathan, and then we'll kind of go around our
yes.
group here.
No,
I just want to let you know.
Okay. That's fine then. All right. Jen, are you all set?
Hey, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just want to get on your, you know, raise my hand, so to speak.
okay.
The thing is that there was something else that I didn't, you know, I forgot to mention, is that, you know, and sadly, I don't know Australia's history, at least not in this level of detail. Things. But when the United States colonies were boiling for independence, not there yet, and most of the hotheads were in Boston, in Massachusetts, John Adams, one of the great leaders in our independence in our country, he did the very famous thing of defending British redcoats as a lawyer, because there was a riot, and there was some shooting, and he believed that it was necessary as a lawyer to give people a defense, whether you like them or not, whether they're popular or not, you know, whether you're on their side or not. And I forget what the defense is. I think it was basically that they were ordered to do it, and they didn't have control over it. We were kind of blaming the foot soldiers and not the people responsible, something like that. But it was, you know, very famous back to the beginning that the lawyers are, you know, it sort of, I hate using the word sacred in a political context, but it's a fundamental necessity to have someone who will speak up for you in court. Otherwise, you know, this is a well-accepted norm. And of course, every norm is crumbling in the face of I'm worried that when you say communism, people won't know what that means. They'll think that just means, you know, the KGB are going to, you know, blow you up with a nuclear missile. But the philosophy is really alive and well and expanding through our entire society. But But so it used to be, like I say, it used to be so well established that that everybody needs to be able to have their rights promoted and advanced by a lawyer, and that doesn't make the lawyer good or bad. That, you know, that those days don't exist anymore.
Yeah. Let's get Jen's reaction, then we'll kind of go around. Yeah, I find it scary how universal these problems are and how well planned they are and well coordinated, that they're all happening at the same time, you know, in the same way in different places. Jen, your reaction to Jonathan?
Yeah, look, it is universal. And, you know, we could all be living around the corner from one another, quite frankly.
Yeah.
it's just undeniable, really, that this is a global, coordinated, pre-planned, orchestrated event. I mean, how could we possibly have so many correlations in coincidence? It's kind of depressing, really. I want to go back to making fun of judges. But anyway...
Yeah, we can do that. Well, I want to get that tape, the tape you mentioned, an interesting comedic. And
yeah,
again, we make fun of a lot of people. Like, I'd love to know what your version of Dr. Fascist is. You know, I'm sure you have one. Who's your Dr. Fascist? Then I'll get to Cindy.
It's him, because we take the lead from America.
Well, your Dr. Fascist is our Dr. Fascist. We're sharing our fascists. That's disgusting. Really? You're seeing him?
Yeah.
You're seeing that horrible, ugly, sniveling little face on your TV just like we are? I'm sorry.
We are, unfortunately.
Call him Dr. Fascist.
With the head of our model, we call him lots of things, actually. But it's
so do tell.
That's for private air.
Okay,
time.
You better write them down.
But,
well, you're in the group. I put you in the reporters group, so you can feel free to communicate with anybody that you're talking to now, except Pianki, who's not a reporter, but I'll work on that with him. Anyway, go ahead. I should throw you in the group anyway, because you're such a part of this show. Let me do that right now, actually. Cindy, go ahead. So you can't tell me any names of this guy? Jen, sorry. I'm getting confused here.
Oh, well, no, I wouldn't say I'm on air. But anyway,
okay. Well,
our shoots here take their lead from Fauci, and he's even been on our TV in interview mode with the heads of our research institutes here, and they were laughing about how he was just saying, how did you guys manage to get people to wear masks over there? And the head of our Doherty Institute says, oh, well, we just find them. And Fauci goes, oh, why haven't we done that here?
Funny.
We're exposed to the same thing. Bill Gates and Anthony Fauci are features of the policies here as well.
Oh, that's amazing. Let's get to Cindy, who may have to go soon, but I wanted to make sure we get a chance to get her back in the conversation, and then Pianki, and then Jonathan, and we'll just keep going around. Jen, I really appreciate all the time you have. This is amazing. This is going to be a historic connection that we're making here of uniting citizen legislators, you know, in our two countries, and I'm really happy to be able to present this to everybody and have this opportunity. Cindy, you got some comments here before you have to dash? Or, I mean, you're welcome to stay the whole show, of course, but I want to make sure we get back to you.
Yeah, no, I will have to run, but Jen, I'd love to share with you some of the legislation that we have been working to pass to, you know, kind of shield our doctors and end the protection that these hospitals are being given to enforce these ridiculous mandates to keep funding and liability protection.
Jen?
That would be really wonderful. I think this could be something that we bring that's already structured, already underway, that you know, those willing can step into and not have to, you know, build it from the grassroots themselves. You know, they can pick it up and start with something. So yeah, that's wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. I'll start maybe pass it on.
Yeah, that's great. Very inspiring what you're doing. Thank you for what you're doing for humanity in the future and for our kids.
Oh, gosh, you as well. We're following your lead. You guys are ahead of us, sadly, in this craziness.
Yeah. I do think we're the canary in the cage, and I do think what you said earlier stands true, that you'll be the final frontier. So, you know, we the more that our two countries communicate and connect and exchange ideas and information, the more powerful, you know, we are on the front right now, and the better prepared you guys will be, because it is coming for you, unfortunately. That's,
yeah.
You know, the reality. But being prepared is the best service that you can offer your people and yourselves right now, you know. Yeah, interesting times, fascinating times, but just wonderful to be able to speak with people like you that are in the trenches and doing what needs to be done, and, you know, in ways, even if it's a parallel society, we will give back the freedoms that have been attempted to be eroded from us in these times.
Absolutely.
Okay, thanks, Cindy. And you guys are both connected now in the Action Radio group chat, so you can contact each other anytime. It's already been done.
Awesome.
Yeah. All right. Let's
stay
get to
free, Jen.
There you go, Jen. All right. Pianki, whatever.
Get that broke up.
Well, she said stay free. And so I think that's a good rallying cry for all
absolutely.
Of us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Stay
yeah.
strong, thou will. Stay strong.
Stay free, stay strong. Hey, there's your rally title for Saturday, or do you have a title already?
Oh, well, stay strong is part of it, but I like stay free, stay strong. That'll work. Which,
yeah,
by
there
the
you
way,
go.
I probably need to wrap up because I'm leading a convoy in about 7 hours from now, so I've got to get time and assembly time in.
Okay. Well, call us back anytime you want.
Yes.
You know, if you get a chance, you know, if you're awake late at night in the convoy, give us a little update. Even if it's only 5 minutes, you know, it's up to you as much as you can. But I'm always glad to hear from you. You're connected with our group. You can connect with any member of our reporter crew. Like
I can do 5 minute
check-in. Yeah.
Yeah, I can do 5 minute check-in. No problems. And yeah, thank you so much. And Pianki, did you have anything you wanted to cover with me, or should I leave you to? Take the
now,
from here and run with it.
What I was going to say is, well, I wanted to say this. It's amazing. It's not amazing, but people are beginning to hear how universal this has become. And I've heard people talk about this in the past. Like I said before, all these people can be lying. But one thing you want to be cognizant of, you have to have your young people, your young children, young adults, involved in this movement, because if you don't, it'll die with you. And that's one thing that they're hoping for, if they don't blatantly outright help it to come to fruition. So keep that in mind. And you know, Greg, isn't it funny, like I said before, when they strip you of your clothes, in this case your ability to protect yourself with weapons, then you are coming from a strong disadvantage. It's very hard because you really don't have no threat to put upon them of any great substance. So let's keep that in mind.
Oh, we have. Believe me, I talked about that with Jen Clark earlier. And in fact, I'd love to, you know, when you can, Jen, we should talk about a Bill of Rights to include, you know, the right to keep, they say keep and bear arms, what they used to say. I would say own and carry arms now. You know, the right to free speech, you know, the right to be able to protest and redress your government for grievances, things we have in our First Amendment, Second Amendment, and of course, Australian amendments, things that you want particularly that you think that individuals in Australia should be free from government infringement upon, if I can sort of, you know, say it like that. But you guys, you know, start work on it. Start putting down ideas. And, you know, you can use our Bill of Rights as a model. Mm-hmm. We don't even have our Bill of Rights enforced as much because we had the churches closed. We had all these other things closed, all these illegal mandates. And it happened, like I say, so fast. And I'm going to ask you this question next time because I know you don't have time now. Who are these people? What do they think? What do they hope to gain? Do they think that they can just control an entire population and it's going to go on forever? You know, I think that's what they believe. And so we need to convince them that they're mistaken, you know. And not only that, you really pissed us off, and we're gonna come back and start rewriting some laws and take away the power of them to create mandates. That's really what I want to go for. I don't want this momentum to go to waste. So that now that we have it, we need to really keep going all the way. Don't just go if they say, okay, we'll get rid of the mandates and everybody goes home. That's what they want. Because then they'll come back, you know, next week with more mandates, and they know you're not going to have the gumption to come back and the energy and the resources to come back and do it again. So we need to do it right the first time. That's what I think. Anyway, let me leave you with that.
Yeah,
and put off the pedal.
Yep.
And to be able to name not only the people, the organizations that they stand for, that they're standing behind. And, you know, another thing too, Greg, we got to be able to name those who are financing these opposition movements that we're seeing.
Oh, yeah.
You have names like Soros, but there needs to be a way to go after them for their conspiratory actions that they are doing.
Well, let's work on the Government Investment Act, or the we'll think of something. We'll think of something that we need to work on. I don't want to take anybody else's freedoms away, even if they're horrible people. But I want to make sure, because that guarantees their freedoms to do things, guarantee our freedoms, but we can stop them from being criminals. And that's going to be an interesting line we have to discuss. Jen Clark from Melbourne, Australia. Good luck with your convoy.
Thank you so much. I am going to check out, and I will leave you with a thought about the question that you asked. And it's just my perspective on things that I share with a lot of people as well. I think these people, you know, particularly some of the main leaders of countries that we have, you know, looked at here, a lot of our current leaders, including Dan, including Trudeau, Ardern in New Zealand, Merkel, and a lot of others, they've been groomed into this. This is a generational plan. And these people in these positions of leadership have been prepared for this moment in their own ways. And when you say, like, we need to send the signal that the game's over, absolutely right. But this is the problem with narcissistic, sociopathic psychopaths. They're a bit like drug dealers. You know, they're so heavily into what they're doing now that they don't even know what a normal day looks like, you know. And that's what we're up against. Is, you know, we're dealing with people that are so far removed from normal, if our sort of normal conduct of life is a measure of normal. But, you know, how the average person lives, they have no comprehension and no connection to that whatsoever. And that's going to be the biggest challenge I think we face, is just really coming to terms with how far gone these people are. You know, they're not just over there part-time thinking like tyrants. Like they're groomed from birth into this, and they don't even know what empathy is, you know. So that's the starting point for us to understand that we're dealing with you know, mindsets, I'll call it that, that are nowhere near a comprehension of what it's like to not be like this. So that's going to be an interesting challenge, and who wins that one, and how we win it.
No, that's a great insight. That's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. So wish you luck at your rally. Go ahead.
Yeah, I do liken it to the drug dealer. And, we're going to be intensely preoccupied for the next couple of days. And I'm hoping to schedule some campsite meetings to talk about the citizens legislation movement, you know, really ramping up here in Australia, because now's the time for us to do this. And we're very grateful to have the backup of you guys and the support. And, you know, we're not out there on our own trying to figure out what we might put together, that you've actually given us a foundation. So thank you for that.
Oh, and my pleasure. That's why I created this. This is the whole point, is to be able to help people and help freedom worldwide. And so this is exactly why I do what I do, and why everybody's associated with the show who is. You know, you get a bunch of smart people together and a bunch of ambitious, driven people, and this is what happens. You know, so I couldn't be happier.
Yeah, that's right.
This is why I say we're winning. We're already winning. We just have to enforce our victory. So if you look at it that way, just keep going. Just keep doing what you're doing. And if you have videos you can post. Anything to do to share the information. And when you feel like it, you know, call us back with an update, and we'll catch up with you then.
Yeah.
Thank you, Jen Clark.
Yeah, for sure, Greg. Thanks so much, guys. Cheers from Aussie, and, stay strong. Stay free.
There we go. All right. Here's your applause.
Bye.
See the fun we have here on Action Radio? Now, who thought when we started this a few years ago, we'd be connecting with Australia, we'd be doing all these incredible things, and we've got the Canadian, I'm going to send this to my contacts, actually. Shelby has a friend who has a friend, you know, up in Canada, and we're hoping to connect with the Canadian truckers, and I want to get the Australian truckers, the Canadian truckers together, and then we'll tie in New Zealand, Israel, and any other country that wants to join us, because we all have the same problem. We all have oppressive governments of narcissist psychopaths. I think Jen absolutely summed it up. Initial comments, and I want to take a little break for a bit. I got a few things, not for too long, and then we'll get back to Jonathan. We'll talk about some of our local issues. Anybody, Cindy, you're still there too. You have a comment, or are you already doing other stuff?
No, I'm just listening at this point.
Okay, well, sounds good. Well, feel free to, and that's I'll leave your line live. But if you, long as you mute yourself, we won't have background noise. But you can always join us again. Pianki, comments?
Well, you know, I was listening to what she was saying. She made mention some words. You know, I remember years ago, and not that long, but Al Gore was at a DeVos conference, and he was speaking on the growth in population in Nigeria. And lo and behold, here, I believe last week I was reading where the government is talking about imposing some restrictions, I guess you could call them that, on the number of children that a family have. So either there, like we were talking about yesterday, we are infiltrated with aliens, evil spirits, but it's something going on, and we need to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, I agree, absolutely. Jonathan, let me get a comment from you, then I'm going to play a couple of things, and we can take a break for a bit, get some more coffee, and let's continue on with some of the more domestic stuff. Jonathan, what do you think? Isn't this cool?
Yeah, it's amazing. I would like to hear, I mean, there's so many things to talk about, and so many things I'd love to have more from Jen about, like, what
She'll
is the Australian Constitution? Maybe you covered that. And
I said it
the
to
other
you.
Differences.
It's on your Facebook pages. I already sent it to you. It's on your Facebook page. Feel free.
Yeah, I know, but I think it'd be good to talk about it and
oh, yeah.
and see, you know, because like I said before, others have made the observation that many countries copied our constitution, but it mm-hmm. doesn't work. Well, it doesn't work here anymore either, which is sort of the reason for the warning. So it'd be very interesting, but it's very disturbing that we've lost, you know, our norms and our basics. She talks about people who don't really know anymore what any of this means. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a big part of the problem. We've got a threat advisory from the Department of Homeland Security right now, where it's very clearly saying that I should go back to my computer and I figure out my coffee here and read it. But that
oh, yeah, I'll be a few minutes.
Disagreements is a threat. What used to be a cherished constitutional right, you know, I don't necessarily agree with what you have to say, but I'll fight, you know, with you to the death to your right to say it. That's mm-hmm. dead. They say the report on Breitbart right now says the threat actors are accused of seeking to exacerbate societal friction, to sow discord, and undermine public trust in government institutions, to encourage unrest. Now, you know, our country was built on trust no one in government. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, getting anyone to doubt the government is domestic terrorism. And of course, then note very carefully as you know, as we descend into darkness here, where it says, which could potentially lead to acts of violence. Notice, of
By
course,
who? Potential... We know where the violence is coming from. It comes from the government.
Yes, it's true, but also pay special note to all these could, maybe, you know, maybe space aliens will come down and, you know, and eat all our hamburgers, you know, who knows? But not only have they completely rejected free speech and the values upon which this country was built, but they're like saying that they, you know, well, you know, if you, who know, you know, if you fly an American flag, it could make somebody mad. Well, maybe it won't. You know, and you know, but this domestic terrorism language and everything is all based on could, maybe, who knows.
Well, that gives them the opening to do what they want. Yeah, I want to hold you up now. I got to play some stuff now. But it's top of the third hour, so let's get a chance. Let's go over that article in detail because that'd be a great place for us to start. So I'm going to put you guys on hold, play a couple things, and we'll be right back in a few minutes. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing, Even fewer had the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can increase foot and website traffic. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it. Greg Penglis here for my book, The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction. Everyone at some point in their life wants to learn how to fly. Few try. Even fewer go on to get a license. I believe a major reason for that is how we teach people how to fly. My book is designed to help you navigate the flight training system, but it's so much more than that. It really describes an entirely new way to teach flying. So if you've never tried a lesson or got discouraged in your training and quit for any reason, this book can help you. Don't be a rote pilot who just follows procedures. Be a thinking pilot who makes great decisions, who understands all the reasons why we do what we do. You can incorporate these principles into your own flight training at any time. The Complete Guide to Flight Instruction is featured on the Action Radio with Greg Penglis Facebook page and is available from Amazon.com. This is Greg Penglis for Strike Force, your source for pure energy. Strike Force is a concentrated energy drink that turns a half liter of your favorite beverage into an energy drink. It contains caffeine, taurine, B vitamins, and potassium. You make your energy drink yourself. Here's how. Add one pack to a standard half-liter water bottle or 16-ounce glass to create a full-power energy drink. No sugar, no calories, no stirring, no shaking. Strike Force energy drinks come in original, grape, lemon, and orange. Each flavor pack is a liquid that adds an explosion of flavor to any beverage. Here's the best part. Action Radio is an affiliate of Strike Force, so our listeners get a 20% discount. All you do is add our code, WYL, to the discount code window at checkout. That's WYL. WYL comes from our website, Write Your Laws. So, you can get your energy drink, get a 20% discount, and help Action Radio change the relationship of we the people to our government. Not bad. Strikeforce is at strikeforceenergy.com. That's strikeforceenergy.com. Start your engines. This is Greg Penglis with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. For our first founding lesson, I want to start with the Declaration of Independence. Basic to any understanding of freedom and liberty are these words written by Thomas Jefferson. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. You will notice there is no reference to race, color, age, nationality, ethnic group, religion, or any of the common leftist categories they use to divide us. David Azarad, in his article for the Heritage Foundation, titled What the Constitution Really Says About Race and Slavery, December 28, 2015, says that no such concepts as race exist in the Constitution, Declaration of Independence, or any founding document. Therefore, since our founding documents have no such concept as race, it's kind of stupid of the left to say that we are founded on racism. The truth, folks, is that they simply made it up to suit their agenda of national sabotage and destruction, so that you would learn to hate your country. We hold these truths to be self-evident. No case need be made. It's plainly obvious. All men, meaning all people, are created equal. Granted, your status once you've come into the world is different from everyone else's because we all have different backgrounds, families, cultures, wealth, education, etc. We have differences, vast differences, but we are created equal. The whole concept of liberty, freedom, and rights are all dependent on keeping God above government. When governments believe they are gods, they will dispense rights as they see fit. When people believe they are gods, they will feel entitled to everything you have. True freedom comes only from the understanding and maintenance in government through control by the people that our rights are unalienable, that they cannot be separated from us, ever, because they came from a power higher than government. That we, the people, also being a higher power, realize and maintain control over government because all just powers of government come from the consent of the governed. How we give our consent is why I created Action Radio. I'll be back next week with another edition of Founding Moments, sponsored by the Santa Rosa Volunteers. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. Yeah, okay, we're back. Yeah, I had to play everything all at once because I didn't want to take another break. You know, I want to be able to get all that stuff in it. And I didn't want to stop Jen. You know, she's going to call all the way from Australia. And I certainly want to. She was on for almost 2 hours. It was an incredible thing we just were able to accomplish there. And so we're going to do more of that. That's why I have a Skype line. So if anybody wants to call in internationally, feel free to use the Skype line. It's right there on our broadcast page. You can find it. You can find it on any episode, live, CID, dot, whatever. Let me get live chat going here, too. Let's get back to Jonathan Pianki. You're the only two left at this point. And so, Jonathan, what's going on with Breitbart? It seems like they've got some pretty good revelations going on there, so we can delve into that in detail now. Of course, anything else we might want to talk about?
Well, I don't know if I'm seeing the same one you're seeing. I don't
have one up yet. I was just looking over stuff and you know, doing some administrative work in the meantime, because I've heard all those things before. So I can do that. Oh, and I can't do I should make a mention real quickly here, too. I'm having trouble uploading right now. Something about Blog Talk, they're not allowing me to upload our new Santa Rosa Volunteers piece. That's why I'm playing the old ones right now. Mm-hmm. We already have Santa Rosa Volunteers Federalist Papers number 9 ready to go, and I'll probably work on the Antifist number 9. I might have both of them available by the time Blog Talk fixes how to take care of the uploading situation. Anyway, back to you, Jonathan. So you've got the article. So, yeah, feel free to talk about that or anything else. Oh,
or several. But
okay.
There's one thing where, you know, they're trying to discredit. I mean, the thing is these efforts, you know, if anybody's falling for them these days, like calling, you know, trying to discredit things as being, you know, racist or things like that, you know, if you're still falling for that, you know, what's wrong with you?
Good question.
You know, we have such a racist country in this country that got an actor has to hire someone to pretend to be racist. And we have white people pretending to be black to get benefits. I mean, I wish everybody were prosperous and had everything better, but come on, you know, you're being manipulated, and I don't, this is one of the things I've been thinking of, and I'll just explain. I'm on the same topic, but just sort of explaining with the January 6th committee, one of the things, you know, I want to do if we get to a jury trial is they say that juries want to know who's the truth teller. And when they're using outrageous language to manipulate you, at some point you realize, wait a minute, they're not the truth teller. When you're
right.
using all these adjectives and things and like baseless and all kinds of things, you know they're trying to manipulate you. You know they're not telling you the truth. So anyway, one thing on Breitbart is that the trucker convoy, you know, is racist and everything like that. I don't know what there is about COVID that would be possibly, you know, what that makes no sense would be your first clue.
I got to jump in here because this is bugging the hell out of me. In what respect is this? I mean, they keep using racism like this jerk thing, and it really is pissing me off because I'm thinking everybody that the government is against is racist. And how exactly is race? What are the truckers in Canada doing that is racist? What are we doing here that's racist? What are doctors who are curing people doing, you know, that is racist? I mean, obviously we know this is a bogus argument, but how, you know, what possible pretense? I know they think we're idiots. But what could be possibly going through their mind that they think this is a logical argument that some people are actually going to buy that, oh, yeah, these people that want their freedom, they're really racist. You know, what I mean, and what race doesn't want freedom who's here in this country? You know, this is the thing. Are they trying to say that only white people want freedom and black people don't, you know, or white people who want to be free to rule over black people? I mean, this is what I think is going through their mind. But where does – I want to get Pianki's on still, too. It's just us three. But Jonathan first. What is the basis of this bogus racist argument that they think actually has any force of anything?
There isn't any, of course, and that, you know, that should be our first clue that, you know, that you're being lied to when you say, well, you know, okay, this is race. Well, one thing I've learned over the years is, okay, suppose you took that out of the equation, would anything be different? You know, if we had everything going on with the trucker convoy and it was or it wasn't racist, would it change anything? And the answer is no, it wouldn't. So that would be your second clue. But Breitbart has up that they're using a flyer from Miami to try to say that the trucker convoy in Canada, you know, is racist. They caught them basically. And you know, the videos, I haven't watched every minute of it or things like that, but I understand that the interviews there are overwhelmingly diverse. I mean, it seems to be the trucker convoy appears to be the most ethnically, racially, you know, religiously diverse gathering of people we've seen in a long, long time. And
Did you see the black Canadian man from Jamaica with his white brother, man? And he says, this is my brother, and we're here in Canada, in Ottawa. Game on. You know, but here's the thing, go ahead. I got another question for you. You're going to love this
one. Well, I was going to say that black Larry Elder is a white supremacist because he doesn't go along with it. You know, Clarence Thomas, Colonel West, you know, all these black conservatives are white supremacists
they're not really,
right?
You know, yeah.
But it shows.
We talked about this.
Go ahead.
I was waiting for you. Yeah, go ahead.
You know, you talk about Clarence Thomas. You know, there's a move in Georgia, I think, where some private concerns want to build a statue of him, and it's the black politicians that's speaking out against it. You know, it reminds me of the CBC, that if you, Jonathan, was representative of a large congressional district, which is majority black, the CBC wouldn't allow you to join. So you're absolutely right.
Tell
this
folks what the CBC is.
Wow.
People don't know what the CBC is. You better explain that.
The Congressional Black Caucus.
Yeah, so we got Australians listening now too. We got a lot. I mean, I told a lot of folks to share this in Australia, so we're hopefully building a whole new audience there as well as everything else. But this is why acronyms, I always like them explained, because people don't know. The Congressional, the liberal, the leftist Congressional Black Caucus does not admit black members. That to me is fascinating.
It doesn't admit whites, and it surely does. It doesn't admit the conservative blacks either.
Yeah. Yeah. So why is it Congressional Black Caucus? It should be called the Congressional, you know, Marxist Caucus, but that's another story. But here's a question for both of you. If the truckers in Canada are racist, would anybody, you know, could we ask the truckers to say, okay, if you think we're racist, what particular racist policy do you think we're asking for? You know, I mean, they're not, I mean, obviously, but this is how my mind works. I'm thinking, you know, that'd be a great way to attack these people. So you think they're racist? Do you think the truckers are racist? Well, what exactly is racist? What particular policy are they advocating the government of Canada, the government of Australia, soon to be the government of the United States, which is false right now, you know, when the American truckers hit D.C. And I'm already working on getting in contact with those folks. But what particular policy can they point to that these truckers are advocating that's racist? And the answer is, you know what the answer is. Who wants to take that one?
Well, not only that, why is the D.C. proposed convoy being brought to the attention of Homeland Security?
That's a good question, too. Jonathan?
Why is it? I mean, because, because, you know, somebody might, you know, because it gets back to the idea that words are violence, you know, all of the liberal nonsense. I mean, the bottom line is to me, is when a government has ticked off its voters that badly, you know, maybe they should look in the mirror instead of, you know, complaining that the voters are really, really mad at them. I mean, these are supposed to be representatives of things like that. So, and you know, the thing is let's look at, you know, let's suppose, in fact, I would love to, and I would, you know, I maybe get more sensitive issues, but I was looking a little bit on the riots of 1968, which followed the assassination of Martin Luther King. And my little understanding of that is that there was a split between the civil rights movement that believed in a peaceful approach and those that believed, no, you're going to have violence. And
was
so,
the Malcolm X, Martin Luther King
that's
split?
And again, I'm not an expert, and Priyanki may have studied this much better than I have. But that's
well,
my
I was going to ask him anyway.
Well, you said not believe me. No, but that's
no, I believe
that's,
you.
That's fine.
I'm going to ask him.
But that's the thing is that the riots that happened in 1968, not the Martin Luther King wing of the civil rights movement at all, they were 1,000 times worse than anything we could ever imagine by some truckers coming in here or something like that. And so, let's say you believed every horrible thing about January 6th you could possibly think of. So what?
Okay.
You know, so some people, you know, so the U.S. Capitol Police were woefully unprepared because of their leadership let them down. And they did a terrible job of the most minimal crowd control because their leaders let them down. You know, if supposedly there were 1,200 to 1,600 people on duty, you know, if they had been, they got their riot gear out and they didn't work. I mean, they found that they'd been stored improperly. So when they got out their riot shields, they shattered, basically all these things about, you know, so I feel bad for any police officer who got injured, but, you know, there was a total dereliction of duty of their leaders and everything like that. So some people got injured, and let's say a few windows got broken.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that I will defend that did not happen. My clients are not responsible. But on a level of, you know, societal panic, you know, so what? This city, the Capitol was literally bombed in the 1970s. In 1968, you know, most of the capital city was burning. They said the smoke was so thick, you know, that it looked like hell everywhere. And we survived. You know, do I accept that? No. But, you know, so much that we're willing to sacrifice our freedoms and panic and say that if you say something I don't agree with, you know, we're going to arrest you. I mean, this is what
you can blow up government.
We're living in the Soviet Union.
You can't blow up the government. You know, people forget that government is people, and people can be replaced, and there are other people, and the spirit of the government, and the rules of the government, and the constitution of government. You know, this is why it would have been impossible for Trump supporters to overthrow anything, even if they destroyed the Capitol building. You know, because the government itself would have gone on. We would have replaced people, buildings, would have replaced everything. It's still based on the Constitution somewhat. But you can't destroy government by blowing things up. You can just destroy buildings and property and things like that. I don't think people understand that. They're talking about this insurrection.
Unless you
Jonathan,
don't care
you
about the government or the Constitution and you think it's just all about you. If you're the congressman from whatever and you think the only thing that matters is you, not the country.
Right, but you can't blow up government.
You can't
overthrow a government by blowing up buildings. Well, maybe
you know another thing, too,
or breaking some windows.
Yeah.
What?
Pianchi?
Yeah. You know another thing, too, Johnson, you're talking about the riots in 1968. But, you know, that effort of the communists trying to infiltrate and influence blacks to riot goes all the way back to the 1920s. 1920s, then again in the 1930s, then again in the 1950s. And apparently the FBI knew this, and they probably suspected that Martin Luther King was being spurred on by the Communist Party also here in the United States. That's why come they've done the surveillance on him to the extent that they did. So a
did
lot of things
him?
Have that cause and effect of why it goes on.
Jonathan?
Well, yes. And like I say, before I went into law school, I was privileged to work with John Kloppis, who's been on the show, and dealing with opposing politically the Soviet Union at the time. And, you know, what I've learned from those who are experts, I'm sure Gaffney could tell you things, but one of the strategies is called, you know, is summarized as destroy the middle. And it's not just about blacks. It's not just about anything. It's that the strategy is always, in order to create a revolutionary energy, revolutionary momentum, you have to destroy the middle so society cannot function and cannot resolve its differences peacefully. It has to come to a point. They teach that when there are grievances, the society is incapable of resolving them. And so the idea that, you know, so – you know, then you see that with everything that's going on in terms of, you know, the grievance culture and everything. And yes, blacks were one of the not blacks per se, but, you know, the whole issue of the treatment of blacks and things was seen as a point of contention, you know, that the communists could sort of exacerbate and bring about. Because the problem with the United States compared to the communists is that our society, our country works, or used to. And so nobody was interested in revolution because our society worked too well. So they've had to have this institution of trying to destroy our society in what seems to be random ways because they've got to make it so the country doesn't work. And that's defund the police. So you have stores where people are looting openly. That helps create the situation where the country doesn't work and people are, you know, and things get, and then people overreact. You know, one of the ideas of the revolutionary movement is to get the ruling class to overreact and then lose the authority of the average person, that kind of thing. So anyway, so yes, it's been, you know, they targeted blacks, but, you know, I would say they targeted everybody, you know, any place they could create any kind of a conflict. They are merchants of conflict.
Yeah, and you look at what COVID did. It took away everything that you consider, you know, middle class, small businesses. You know, they closed down churches. They wanted people in their homes. They closed down the schools. They did all kinds of things. You know, but they didn't cut any benefits. I don't, you know, in fact, they were increased the benefits. They paid people not to work. You know, so they did all the things that you know, a functioning profit-based, you know, industrious middle class would normally take part in, you know, church, school, business, commerce, things like that. But they kept the big businesses because you can regulate them, and they're the ones donating to the government. And you've got this nice little fascist arrangement between big business, big tech, you know, and allegedly, of course, you know, big pharma, and you know, and they're all working together. But in other words, the big businesses are favored. This happened in Nazi Germany too. You know, the government corporate, you know, merging together. In this kind of thing, but they took away but they didn't take away any government offices. And I said, why aren't we shutting down government? If you're going to shut down small business, why don't you shut down small government, shut down middle government, shut down big government? Nobody had their payroll cut in government. Nobody was laid off. Nobody lost their job. I mean, people may have had to work from home, but nothing was closed. Government was open for business 100%. You know, so it's a crazy thing. I had a question for Pianki on Malcolm X and Martin Luther King and maybe some gaps in our knowledge that we don't know. You know, was Malcolm X communist influence or was he just independent? Did he just figure that violence was a faster way to equality? Some differences that you know, people might not know about, including me.
Well, Pianki? I really can't tell you whether or not that was. I was a young child. I was a kid then, if you ever believe that. But I do say this.
Me too.
There is some white faces behind some of these movements that is being carried out by black organizations, because that's where the money's.
Okay.
Blacks don't have that kind of money. The money is coming from somebody with a white face that's representing an organization that has an agenda. And it has been that way in the past. Even the civil rights movement itself, the money came from 92 white corporations that was led by Stephen Cohen, I believe his name was. And the lady, his wife, girlfriend, Audrey, I can't think of her last name because it rhymes with a great foundation we have today, the Mellon Foundation, Audrey Mellon. Yeah,
so that'd be Andrew Carnegie. Yeah, Carnegie Mellon, yeah. And what's his name? Mellon was the bankers. They were bankers. And Carnegie was Steele, and I think Mellon was a banker. Yeah, okay.
So it goes on today. If it worked in the past, they're going to continue to try it today.
But there are, you know, to say that the blacks don't have any money, you've got, who's the owner of Black Entertainment Television? You've got, you know, a lot of folks that you've got, I think Herman Cain, you know, was a pretty wealthy industrialist. You got a lot of folks. I don't know, I mean, how many black billionaires? How many black billionaires do
they have? Money in that way.
Okay.
Blacks that's successful in this country love the United States. Where else would you be able to do that? Surely could go to Africa and do it.
Yep.
You surely couldn't go to Argentina and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So you got you have those that even despise them. But I'm saying this is that you got some organizations.
Right.
And it's another one of those things where you need to start identifying, putting names to these things. That is being sponsored, that's being supported by a white face that's representing some other cause.
Well, I'm sure there are white people behind the civil rights movement. I'm sure, you know, Martin Luther King, Martin Luther King had a bunch of, you know, white supporters and, you know, people that marched with him. But as to where the money
from,
that's
BLM?
A good question. Yeah, well, so, yeah, they have money. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, and they get it from corporations. They get it from everywhere. Huh. Jonathan, what do you think about
this? And the question is what he was saying made me think is are they basically using their name, or are they actually promoting an agenda that actually helps people, you know, at whatever group, in this case, blacks? Is their agenda to actually help blacks, or is it to exploit their issue for their own agenda?
They're exploiting the issue. They are exploiting them because you know, whites have been conditioned over the decades to come dead to a stop when they hear that word racism. That was a conditioning.
Yeah.
And it worked. It worked.
It still works.
So no, they've been exploited, Jonathan.
Not on this show.
That's what it is.
Yeah.
We should, Jonathan, I don't know if you're aware of when Black Lives Matter host called us. And actually, I kind of goaded him to doing it. Actually, accused me of being a racist. Oh, it's hysterical. I knew it was coming. I mean, I didn't really give him much choice. He sort of had to accuse me of being a racist. And of course, once he did, I didn't have to screen him. Pianki was on the line. Josie was on the line. You know, I was the only white guy on the program, and he's calling me a racist. It was funny. It was really funny. And he hasn't called back much. He's called a few times. Warren was his name. He didn't call back much. But yeah. So anybody who accuses me of racism, you know, you're in for it. Good luck. You know, all I can say is you better have a bunch of facts. And of course, if you do, I know you're making them up, because if this were a racist show, I wouldn't have, you know, half the callers on that I do. So go ahead, challenge me. I dare you. Anybody, feel free. But it was really interesting. But see, I'm not afraid of that charge. You know, I grew up and I've told this story before too. In Canada, it was mostly white. I mean, it's almost all white. I don't remember many other races, but in Australia, I went to in Australia was very multiracial. We had Samoans, Indians, you know, from India. We had Asian folks. We had Japanese students. We had Maoris from New Zealand. We had I don't remember an Aborigine student, but certainly we knew of and knew people and had guest speakers and everything else. You know, so I was exposed to a very multiracial, multicultural school, private school in Australia. So, and to me, I didn't even know the concept of race. There was no concept of race in my brain. I never heard the word. Didn't, you know, did I know that there were white people and black people and Asian people and, you know, people that looked different? Of course. But the thing was, it didn't register. It didn't mean anything to me. It was this entire alien concept until I got to the United States. Now, all of a sudden, I'm seeing white Americans and black Americans. You know, the white students don't like me because I'm Australian. I had really thick. I sounded like Jen Clark. I sounded exactly like her when I got to the United States. It was hysterical. And to me, I was just talking. But to them, I was the foreigner. You know, Paul Hogan hadn't done Crocodile Dundee yet, so they didn't know anything about Australians. So the white kids didn't like me because I was Australian. The black kids didn't like me because I'm white. I'm looking at both white and black students seeing Americans, and I can't figure out why they're not getting along because they're all Americans. I'm the foreigner here. I'm the minority. You know, and I'm looking, you know, they said, well, black people are a minority. I said, hell no, I'm a minority of one. There was not a fellow Australian, Canadian, you know, student anywhere to be found in New England when I was at school. I was the minority. And yet, I look like a white guy, so I'm not a minority. And people are calling me an oppressor. I said, like, I've been in this country 2 years, you know, like in junior high. I said, oppressing what? I just got here. Who exactly is it that I've oppressed? You know, and so this whole thing started, you know, and it's a very interesting tale. But having grown up not only without racism, but without the knowledge of race or the awareness of race, gives me a very interesting perspective looking at this country, you know, even though I'm, you know, 100% loyal American. But it allows me to say things like when someone accuses me of racism, I say, well, good luck to you with that. You know, I'm going to challenge you really strongly, too. So you better be ready for a battle. And I'm going to make fun of you like you wouldn't believe, like I did with Warren. So anyway, Pianki was there. Remember that, Pianki? We had remember the title of the show was the Nazi, the mask burner, the Latina, and the black guy. That was Pianki. That was the title of the show.
Yeah, I remember. But you know, getting back to the situation. You know, I'm noticing that you, like for instance, in one African country, Burkina Faso, and they had a coup where they took control of the government, and they said that the president was not doing enough to stop Islamic terrorists from infiltrating the country. Well, then one has to wonder, these weapons, I wonder if part of the Afghan-American surrender of military equipment, will that start filtering down with some of these other groups that's doing these terrorist operations, especially look like they're starting to come more central into Africa?
Well, yeah, they're open market. They're on the open market.
Yeah,
the arms Mogadishu. You can go to Somalia and pick up, you know, Americans' latest weapons, our armed forces weapons, real cheap. You know, I don't know. That'd be an interesting thing to look into is the Taliban, because the Taliban has more weapons than they can possibly use. You know, the goat herders can't fly helicopters. You know, but there's a lot of things
that
are valuable. Yeah,
with the
overthrow
of Gaddafi in Libya, because their weapons catch. I think, and others have said, start filtering down through Mali with the Tuareg, going over into maybe Boko Haram in Nigeria.
Interesting. I'm sure there's a pipeline. I'm sure there's a weapons pipeline that goes directly there. Well, Benghazi was a pipeline. It was a pipeline from Hillary Clinton to Syria, you know, to affect the new ISIS. I mean, that's pretty well known. In fact, I'll probably play next Monday my Benghazi tape where I had two, you know, veterans, you know, talk about the stand down orders, you know, from two different branches of the service. So, yeah. So I've got that was WBY. I got that documented. So, yeah, there's Jonathan, do you know anything about that, about weapons pipelines or you know, tracking or tracing weapons?
Well, I mean, it's definitely been alleged. It's one of the primary motivations behind Benghazi, like why in the world was there a consulate out in Benghazi in the middle of nowhere? You know that was one of the big issues. I don't know if they ever are able to prove it because it's the cover up and the media and everything like that. One thing I wanted to leap back to and point out is that, you know, I was impressed that in the the Soviet Union, especially towards the last couple of decades, they had total media dominance, you know, in terms of, you know, there was no freedom of speech and everything like that.
Right.
And, you know, the Washington Post says democracy dies in darkness, which they certainly would know because they are the darkness. What the experience has said is that the people in the Soviet Union, you know, what we used to call captive nations, they could read between the lines. They knew how to read Pravda and Izvestia and TASS and understand what was really going on because they were savvy to the techniques.
Mm-hmm.
We need in this country to get to that point where we have educated people enough that.
Well, I think to a large extent we are.
But the average,
I don't know if
enough of the population where they're able to see, you know, I know the tactics. I know, like, for example, when someone is saying, the DHS is saying, you know, there could possibly be a, violence from a trucker convoy. Well, maybe there won't be, you know, but using this kind of language to, justify the denial of our rights.
There's a greater question here that we've talked about sometimes, but this whole idea of a compelling state interest or reasonable restrictions on rights or the knee-jerk thing that whenever there's an emergency, the first thing they say, well, we have to curb your rights. Well, there's no relationship between an emergency and curbing your rights, or at least there shouldn't be. But they always mm-hmm. create a situation where no matter what it is, the first thing that goes, the government says, we're going to clamp down. We're going to basically impose martial law. What was it about COVID that could not have been solved without everybody still having their full constitutional rights? You know, could it have been solved without mandates? Sure. Without school closures? Absolutely. Without masks? Definitely. Without the restrictions on our doctors? You know, everything that went wrong with COVID was because our rights were removed. So it's just so an emergency mm-hmm. is when you need your rights the most. But this knee-jerk reaction that an emergency allows you to get rid of stuff, and I reject the compelling state interest, the idea that things are done for the public good. The public good is the sum total of individual decisions. That's what's the public good. And this idea, this knee-jerk quick, you know, well, we better take away the rights. And the people accepting of that, as Pianki says, the Constitution doesn't have an on and off switch. You know, an emergency, there's nothing that you can't fix in an emergency that can't be fixed while maintaining 100% constitutional rights, which is our birthright. That's the way I see it.
Right, absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And especially, particularly when you say that kind of thing would go into court. And again, the courts have sold out decades ago.
Mm-hmm.
If we get to Wisconsin, I'll list that a little bit more. But the issue is, like you say, what is an emergency? And,
good question.
You know, so you say if there's an emergency, we should suspend the Constitution in whole or in part. Well, mm-hmm. what constitutes an emergency to you?
And well, you can't
just
do that.
The fact that
there's no suspension clause
but
in the Constitution.
I'm taking it apart step by step, though.
Okay.
Because you can't do that. But let's say that you can. Could you then say that I'm going to say that an emergency means that, you know, some people are exercising their First Amendment rights, but it could get out of control.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not an emergency, and that's not fact. You know, to go into court and say that, you know, we should suspend the Constitution whole or in part, you better have a stronger showing, as they say, than, you know, well, we're worried that, this could happen. Well,
that's prior restraint, isn't that?
It is. It's absolutely
being arrested for what you might do in the future, maybe. Yeah, that's illegal.
Yes, it is. And we once lived in a society that went by the rule of law, and we once had a constitution, and we once had courts that respected the constitution, and that was a very, very strong thing. Prior restraint? Hell no.
Mm-hmm.
Today,
that's what gun control is. This is why all gun control is illegal, mm-hmm. because all gun control is based on prior restraint of taking honest, law-abiding citizens and arresting them and seizing their property for what they might do in the future, maybe. Well, anybody has the potential for that. Let me remind you about Waco. So if you want to talk about prior restraint, I would like to disarm the government so they don't engage in another Waco. I would like to completely abolish the FBI, probably most of the Justice Department, for the protection of, well, they might do that again. I mean, what if Brandt, who seized the presidency illegally with the help of a whole bunch of people, you know, is sitting there. What if he's going to do another Waco? He's not responsible. What if he causes a war in Ukraine? He's not responsible because he's not really the president. He's just sitting there. Okay. So you've got an illegal government, which, you know, if Clinton, who was elected, as far as I know, was able to pull off Waco and bulldoze and gas the bodies and then bulldoze them into the ground after they burn to death, you know, if he's able to do that and never be held accountable, who's to say that Brandon, with an illegal government, can't do a whole lot worse? That's the problem. So what we really need is prior restraint. The Constitution is prior restraint on the government. That's the way it's supposed to work. Pianki, go ahead.
Well, it is. You're right.
Yeah, let's do away that part of the Constitution and let the courts exist if we want to do that.
No, you just need to do away with judicial review. We've got bills on it. See, the problem with the court, and Jonathan, I want your opinion on this too, it's not what the Constitution says about the court, because I agree with Article 3. It's what the Supreme Court did in Marbury versus Madison and what they continue to do, and this idea that they interpret the law. Well, interpreter is someone who translates something from one language into another. So if interpretation is translating the Constitution into whatever they want, that's what an interpretation does. So I don't want the Constitution interpreted. I want it used.
You are correct if only it stops there.
Oh, okay.
If that kind of thinking and that kind of abuse had ended with Marbury versus Madison, it wouldn't be nearly as bad as it is.
But it didn't.
Nothing about the Constitution should be suspended. If you suspend the Constitution, then, Jonathan, all bets are off. If I go out and commit a crime, who am I responsible to? There's no law saying I can't do the kind of crime because the Constitution is gone.
Yeah, well, you can't suspend the Constitution.
There's no such.
Yeah, go ahead, Jonathan.
Other than in loose political talk, there is actually no such thing as suspending the Constitution, at least not according to anything that we've understood.
Well, there's a reasonable rights, clause, reasonable restriction on rights clause either. There's no compelling interest clause. This stuff has all been made up, like I say, rightly pointed out, since Marbury versus Madison. So what we really need to do is get rid of all the, have the court look first to the Constitution and maybe to precedents, maybe if the precedence is correct. But they go first to precedents. They solve these cases with their own cases. So since they've already based the entire federal judiciary on the false premise of judicial review, therefore every precedent that follows from that is based on the false premise too, right?
Yeah, constitutional law that, I studied in the course, constitutional law, is not about the Constitution, it's about precedent. We don't
which
study
is,
the Constitution. We study what
– Yeah.
Yeah. And this is why I was, burning, doing a slow burn through the entire law school.
Mm-hmm.
Is
not president judges making laws, legislating to an extent?
Supposed to be. I mean, the thing is, I know it sounds terrible to say that. I know it sounds conspiratorial. And like I say, over all the years, you said, "Oh, you're just staying over the top." But you have to come to the conclusion that, however bad you think, it's way worse in every area of society, in every area of government. Whatever. I think like Ronald Reagan, failed in terms of controlling the government thing because he assumed a certain level of reasonableness, and he didn't realize how bad it really is. And it was worse than he even thought, because I was in the government after that, and I saw how things happen. Trump's, although I don't know that he could have done any different because all of official Washington was against him, but I think if he made a mistake, it was thinking that things were not as bad as they actually are, and that sort of thing. So, and in the courts, it's like, there are so many things. It's like, When you talk about these precedents, one of the things I noticed is that on every issue, there's what they call a line of precedents that say A, and another line of precedents that says not A. So there are all these definitive precedents that say opposite things. And so whenever a court wants a result, they pick from column A or they pick from column B and come to the exact opposite result, depending on which precedents they want to choose. So even the precedents are completely dishonest. And the thing that I wanted to say is like Christine O'Donnell, ran for Senate in Delaware a decade ago, and her opponent was a lawyer, and they had a debate at Widener Law School. And she clearly knew the Constitution better than the lawyer or the lawyers there did, but that's not how it was reported. So the lawyer who Chris Coons, she talked about the Constitution, and he actually said, which Constitution? You know, and he said, because Explain. We've had four or five of them.
Oh.
You know, and that's on tape. He said that because of reinterpretation, you know, and going through different eras of constitutional philosophy in the Supreme Court, that he rejected the idea that we have one constitution, we've always had the same constitution. He literally described it as being different constitutions in different periods of our history.
And that didn't make it into the general public before the election?
Of course not.
Well,
I've
heard that before. I've heard that before.
What?
I've heard that before. That question and that slant about there's been more than one constitution.
And, you know, which you could say lots of different things about that. But the point being that, you know, the idea that the 14th Amendment completely changed the Constitution, but why did the Supreme Court allow it that way? And that kind of, and they, you know, they're just different philosophies. But anyway, so I mean, that's part of the problems that we have. Now, if Priyanka doesn't have a response, I could shift a little bit to Wisconsin and I could kind of mention some, you know, show some of the same things going on there.
Well, we declared Pennsylvania for Trump last week. Let's do you want to declare for Trump in Wisconsin, or you want to hold off for a little bit?
No, not quite. And it's a little bit
okay.
Different because because that's still working its way up through the levels of the courts.
Okay.
Is what the difference is there. Now in Pennsylvania, of course, the law that allowed mail-in ballots that, you know, that are not asked for and don't qualify in the narrow terms was declared unconstitutional. Mm-hmm. And the Pennsylvania Commonwealth Court said it was unconstitutional ab initio, meaning from the beginning, which means there's no way you can get away from the fact that in the 2020 election, 2.6 million mail-in ballots were illegal and really unconstitutional. And therefore, mm-hmm. if you look at the numbers, which I did for you, that means that Trump won Pennsylvania.
Yep.
Because he won, Biden won an overwhelming majority of the mail-in ballots, which are unconstitutional. And Trump won the other ballots. So he won Pennsylvania's 20 ballots. In Wisconsin, there's a similar issue going through where, again, under Wisconsin's constitution, the drop boxes are what they're challenging. Now, I'm not saying, again, they couldn't challenge other things, too. They probably, mm-hmm. there are probably lots of things. This is why it's like the problem with, well, the dishonesty about the election is that the election was wrong in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. So they say, show me the fraud. Like, we don't even have to get to the fraud, you know, to talk about the changes of the law.
Yeah.
So so they go through all these things, you know, all these problems. So I'm sure that there are probably more things that if anyone had the courage to actually look into, they could. But here, an organization is challenging the drop boxes because
but it's
the
not
Constitution ab initio. Talks about
it doesn't go back to the 2020
well, they
election.
Haven't gotten
this is,
there yet.
Oh, okay, all right.
The problem is that there the decision was made in the circuit court. And it's then being appealed, and the issue is that while it's being appealed, that should it be stayed? So the and again, this is one of the things is that a parallel case, the Supreme Court did not take the case. So when you talk about the, you know, the dishonesty of the courts, the power. Something like this, there should be no discretion to take a case or not take a case, because by the appeal court or the Supreme Court of a state not taking the case, they're manipulating the outcome. You know, because when it comes to a constitutional question or a core constitution or issue like this, they should always be required to take the case consistently across the board. By picking and choosing,
mm-hmm.
they're twisting the outcome. They did not take one case, and then they're saying that while they're considering the appeal, they allowed the law to continue for the February primary. And now there's some, you know, this is the problem. There are principles and laws and precedents that only apply when they help the deep state, and mm-hmm. the establishment. You know, they don't. So the idea that you should not change the law close to an election. Well, if they applied that law in 2020, you know, Trump would, we would have had honest elections and Trump would have won. Because they, it's like, for example, you know, people say that, you know, we won for, Biden won fair and square. Well, if you change the rules in the Super Bowl, like one side, one team gets 20 players and the only other only gets 11. And then the team with 20 players wins. Like, well, did they actually win? You know, because you had to change the rules to get them. But anyway, so.
Yeah, if they have extra footballs, they can carry over the touchdown line. So say one team has four footballs and the other team has one. You know, right. it's like ballots.
Say, well, you,
that's there's your analogy for the stolen election. Bianchi?
Right. So, go ahead.
Or, do you have a question?
Yeah, absolutely right. That, makes, yeah. That only makes good sense.
Yeah. I like that analogy. Right. I'm going to use that again. Democrats have four footballs,
so question,
Republicans have
so
one.
They say
go ahead.
So when they say Biden won, mm-hmm. you say, yeah, but by what rules?
Good
he,
point.
He won by changing the rules. And so anyway, so the thing is that they are now, so if they had applied this rule, then we wouldn't, you know, they wouldn't have allowed these changes.
Well, when these
so
changes
are
going through,
is,
yeah, go ahead, finish, then I'll, I got a question.
Well, just so the Wisconsin court is saying that the circuit court found similar to Pennsylvania that all the votes at drop boxes were unconstitutional, but it's only the lowest level trial court saying it, and it hasn't worked its way up to the appeals court yet. So, so what's happening is they put a stay on it to say that, well, we're not going to disrupt the February primary. Now that raises the question, like you say, does that mean it's unconstitutional ab initio?
Right.
But what they're doing is they're saying, like, we're not, you know, normally during appeal, we're not sure yet. So we're not going to do something disruptive this early in the appeals process. But then you
only
get the
drop
question,
boxes.
You know, you ask,
explain those drop boxes, Jonathan, because for people here that they don't understand, what's so awful about those drop boxes?
Because there's no one there receiving. Because, you know, the Constitution in Wisconsin and the laws used to say that you have to present it to an election official, either
mm-hmm.
through the U.S. mail, which is presumptively, you know, you may laugh, but it's presumptively official and accurate, that the U.S. mail is presumed to be part of the government and it has a special status that delivery through the U.S. mail is to be trusted. And,
yeah, you're right.
or you give your ballot to... Yeah. Yeah, don't laugh too loud. But that's the way the law looks at it. So the thing is presumption of regularity. So the thing is that if you or you present it to an actual election official, a drop box is just like a mailbox. You just drop it in there. No one sees you do it. We have video apparently of people stuffing the drop boxes with hundreds of absentee ballots, and because again you can. I mean, we have these things in Arizona, which they haven't gone in. Like, you know, that in Arizona, though, you have better experts than me. You know, they did not find that Biden won Arizona. They simply said, if you don't consider any of the massive problems, the
mm-hmm.
simple recount is that Biden won.
Well, that's
won
not going to take
a majority of the ballot.
People don't understand that the recount was recounting the fraud. They basically confirmed the fraud as a baseline. And if you take out all the fraudulent votes, and people think that you have to, you know, prove that this would overturn the election. No, you just have to prove any kind of fraud. And I use the example all the time. If a bank robber robs a bank, but not enough to put the bank out of business, you know, is that person guilty of robbery? Well, of course they are. So it's not the question of how much fraud. It's the question, is there any fraud? Bianchi.
Where are these drug boxes taken to? I would say that the ballot should be counted at the location rather than transporting these ballot boxes someplace where there's opportunities for malfeasance to go on.
Well, there's that, there's that, but also I think about the way the ballot boxes work is that the individual can drop their absentee ballot into a box instead of mailing it.
But then you have to have certification, signature checks, everything has to match. You have to match the ballot to the person that did it. And of course, you don't look at their vote. You separate that. But I'm just saying that the ballot envelope, this is what Dr. Shiba was doing, was he was analyzing all the ballot envelopes. And they weren't doing that. They weren't checking signatures. There's no way to prove ID. You know, they were just doing all kinds of crazy stuff. So what Piaggi said, I want to make this point real quickly, too. We've only got about 5 minutes left, is my philosophy, and I'm going to write a bill on this, counted where cast. It has to be counted where cast. And there can be no transportation of ballots at all anywhere. If it's cast at the precinct, it's counted at the precinct, and then the results are reported from there, and the ballots are kept at the precinct. Ballots can't be transported. Yep. Because the minute you transport them, that's where your problems come in. So whether it's a Dropbox or whether it's by the mail or whether it's by somebody bringing, you know, envelopes to or ballots to a central counting place, none of that stuff can be allowed. You have to count it where cast, and you have to cast it at the poll. That's the only way to get – and even then there's going to be cheating, but it's nowhere going to be near as much as there is now. And, of course, you don't have voting machines. You count at the precincts, manual count of paper ballots, or maybe an optical scanner or something like that. Counted where cast, reported where counted, and that's the only way you're going to even begin to get a secure election.
And also, you know, audits should not be controversial. Audits should be universal. Every election should be audited.
Every presidential election should have an audit. In fact, every election should have an audit. You don't do it that way. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I don't care if you think it was well done or not. You know, if it's, you know, a company, a corporation is supposed to have an independent audit by a CPA, and our elections aren't that important. But the thing is, I once volunteered at an election precinct probably 10 years ago or more. And the number one, you know, thing we started with is how many people signed in at the desk. Mm-hmm. And if everybody, the ballots had to match how many actual real live people presented proper identification and that. So the count of how many ballots were validly cast is incredibly important. That drives everything else. Whereas you stuff an absentee ballot box on the street because, oh my God, I might, you know, if I might get COVID if I took my absentee ballot down to the mailbox and put it in my mailbox to pick up. Because the absentee ballot,
another thing too, Jonathan, my method would have three people counting the ballot. If the first and second don't agree, then the third would break the tie. But ultimately, when a person gets done voting, he gives that ballot to the attendee gives it to the first counter, then the second counter, then the third counter, then they all should correspond with one another. And if they don't, there within that hour, you are working with less ballots to find out what the error is.
But then you don't have anonymous ballots, though, because if you trace a ballot to the person who gave it, then you know how they voted. You can't. That's going to be disputed right away. You can put things into a ballot box, but the thing is that the ballots have to be counted right there at the precinct. They can't go anywhere. I think it's a secure thing.
Well, yes and no, because we have optical scanners here in Virginia, and if someone were looking over my shoulder, they would be able to see it, how I voted.
Well, optical scanners,
I'm not disagreeing.
I like optical scanners.
In part.
Yeah.
I'm just saying in part that, you know, there's a balance. But,
Okay.
So he's asking what's the problem. Like I said, I go back to our friends in Boca Raton, Florida, who went to vote during the Bush v. Gore, and they found they were told they've already voted.
Yep.
And you know these things happen. But I also love to point out when liberals say, "Well, the voter fraud was all by Republicans." It's like, "Oh, do you agree? We need to tighten up the laws." You know, you're admitting that it can happen. So, let's tighten up the laws then.
Than a minute. I'll give it to you, Jonathan. In the summary.
Oh, I don't know.
Okay, I'll summarize.
Well, the summary is that watch Wisconsin because,
You
know, the courts will probably you know, support the steal, but it's on appeal. If at the moment they're taking the attitude that they're going to continue with the law, the fraudulent law, while it's just because they don't know yet what the outcome is going to be. But I think when they, if they finally overturn it, they're going to have to say that it was void ab initio. They were always wrong. So Wisconsin would go to Trump as well.
Yep.
And that would be the election. That would be 11.
Wisconsin and Arizona? I think
is
you
that,
need
which
more.
Is,
you need one more.
Okay. I forget which one is 10. It maybe is Arizona 11 or Wisconsin 11? I'm not sure. The other one's 10.
Yeah, I think Arizona's 11, Wisconsin's
okay.
10. Yeah. Anyway, we're out of time. I want to thank everybody who participated today in helping us make history. You know, with Jen Clark in Australia, we now have established international citizen legislation. It works. We proved it works. You know, Jen Clark has gone to the trucker convoy. She's going to be checking back in with us. We're going to help them with a Bill of Rights. We've got all our bills are now models for Australia. You know, everything that we've done here can now be looked at by Australians and they can adapt to their country. So we've just made history. We've made broadcast history. We coordinated all on the radio show for the first time. Action Radio works. I told you it was going to work. I told you all Action Radio works. And now we're able to help other people and they're going to tell other people about this. I'm going to send this report to my Canadian friends and hopefully they'll connect with the Canadian truckers. And then we're going to work on New Zealand and Israel. And we're just going to be one big, happy international family of freedom seeking, freedom loving people. It's going to be wonderful. On that note, thank you, gentlemen. I'll be back tomorrow with more. We're not done yet. We're just getting started. Greg Fengles here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Our legislative website is writeyourlaws.com at writeyourlaws. If you want to contribute for now, we still have our paypal.me/actionradio account, but I'm going to set up today Give, Send, Go, the Christian alternative to GoFundMe. And, of course, you want to email greg@writeyourlaws.com. Back tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock Central, 7 Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. And the rest of you folks, well, you guys can figure it out.